she give us a count?
No.
Okay.
I hope we're, I don't know if we're on the air or not.
Are we on the air?
I think she hung up.
Okay, here we go. We're going to pretend that we're live.
I wonder if anybody's listening.
For the past into the future. I'm your host, Brooke Sack.
Wow,
the
that's really quiet.
The results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose. For the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, where the skies are clear and the wheat fields go on forever. We've got a great show for you tonight, so we want you to stay with us all 3 hours. If you're not getting all 3 hours, please let us know. We'll get a hold of your affiliate and take care of the rest. We are coming to you live on the VBS Radio Network and the Steel Eye Media Networks, courtesy of Kevin Smith. The solar wind started out today. It's a medium 435.3 kilometers per second. The sun is blank again today with no sunspots, but the protons per cubic centimeter is up to about 4.0. There is a coronal hole facing Earth, but the wind from it will not reach us until the 28th or 29th, which may be the next best chance for a solar-generated aurora borealis. If there are northern lights between now and then, they didn't originate from the sun. So, if you see them, send us a picture or call in or email us at info@x2-radio.com. We'll make sure that information gets on. Researchers have found the genetic basis of two distinct forms of inherited hair loss opening a broad path to treatments for thinning locks, according to a pair of studies released today. Hair-challenged adults spend upward of $1 billion every year on mostly bogus remedies in the United States alone, according to the Food and Drug Administration. Geneticist Regina Betts of the University of Bonn and her colleagues hunted down a gene, P2RY5, you might want to write that down on the back of your hand, that causes a rare inherited form of hair loss called hypotrichosis simplex. This particular disease affects both men and women who begin to go bald during childhood. She says, now we can search selectively for related substances that may be used in therapies for very different types of hair loss. The human head comes equipped with approximately 100,000 of these tiny hair-generating organs. And once they stop working, it was thought the scalp was doomed to gradual exposure. A healthy individual loses about 100 hairs a day, but they are normally replaced at the same rate. So it looks like we will comb again. The full lunar eclipse on Wednesday was visible by most of the nation. It was very rare to see the entire moon turn to blood red due to the halo of light bending around the Earth, striking the full moon. The event lasts about 2 hours, and if you can bear the cold and take some stable time-elapsed photos, it makes a very cool short film. If you know of any astrological significance to this event, be sure to call in tonight and tell us about it. We're not astrologers here, but if you know the significance of a full lunar eclipse, it seems the last time this occurred was in November of 2004. And it heralded, let's see, what did we call that? The grand sextile alignment, where six planets aligned in the shape of a Star of David in the sky, with a full lunar eclipse in the middle. Very rare. Last time it happened was 5,000 years ago. It heralded the birth of King Solomon. In a twist of cosmic irony, the Ulysses spacecraft, which orbits around the sun, is on the verge of freezing to death. The 17-year-old spacecraft's demise has been hastened by a glitch, preventing power from keeping its fuel from freezing. Ulysses launched in October of 1990, then swung by Jupiter in 1992, using the planet's powerful gravity to change its orbit into one that passes over the north and south poles of the sun, the first spacecraft ever to do so. The joint NASA and European Space Agency mission has studied a stream of charged particles from the sun called the solar wind, discovered interstellar dust blowing through the solar system, and flown through three cometary tails. The spacecraft is now critically ill, however, because a glitch is preventing power from being rerouted to keep its hydrazine fuel from dropping below its 2 degrees Celsius freezing point. Once the fuel freezes, there will be no way to control the spacecraft, but they had hoped to stave off the end by switching off the spacecraft's main radio transmitter, which it uses to communicate with Earth when it was not needed. This was done in January and was expected to free up more power for the spacecraft's heater. Ulysses discovered fast-moving gusts of solar wind streaming from holes in the sun's outer atmosphere, or corona, which we report to you each week right here on X Squared Radio. Hopefully, we will be able to continue to retrieve this data for you, as it should give us the best early warning of solar flare dangers that are associated with the 2012 end times scenarios. Speaking of that, huge filaments of dark matter have been detected in a survey of thousands of distant galaxies. The discovery supports the idea that dark matter drove the formation of galaxies and larger cosmic structures,
and resolves a discrepancy in the previous studies about how much dark matter the universe contains. The survey, which is still ongoing, has already covered an area of the sky around 300 times the size of the full moon. Astronomers led by Liping Fu of the Institute of Astrophysics in Paris, France, have, have analyzed data gathered by the 340 megapixel megacam. Now that is a camera, the largest astronomical camera in the world, attached to the 3.6 meter Canadian France Hawaii telescope, also known as the CFHT in Hawaii. The observations reveal dark matter via a subtle effect called weak lensing, which studies galaxies' apparent shapes. The shapes can be distorted by the gravity of an intervening matter, which deflects the galaxy's light. It's kind of interesting, because the pattern of those distortions points to a web of vast dark matter filaments, some stretching at least 270 million light-years across space. This is precisely the discovery we predicted in our first volume of The Arc of Millions of Years, published in 2006. Now, that's pretty amazing stuff there. Hold on one moment. I must take care of a technical difficulty I'm having. I think that will fix it right there. Nope, that's not doing it. Hang on. We are suffering from bandwidth problems. There we go. Now I think we're good to go. And, alright, now, the problems that we are having in automated radio. So much fun. Last week we provided you an archive of my interview with Michael Horn. He is the U.S. representative of the Billy Meyer story. I hope you enjoyed that. This week we have open lines for you to call in, and we also have a special guest with us, one of my good friends. James Gilliland is with us tonight. We're going to discuss UFOs, satellites, and all kinds of innovations and news in the contact region, a contact subject with maybe civilizations from other worlds. Welcome to the program, James.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, I'll tell you. It's, I met James in 2006. He invited me up to his what he calls the ranch. It's a very special facility, also affectionately called the sanctuary. I originally thought it was a sanctuary for UFOs to come to feel safe. But I finally figured out after about two or three days there that it was for us, so we could go someplace where we would not feel like we were crazy, because we really wanted to see a UFO, and this was the place to come. So I was not disappointed either, was I, James?
No, you weren't.
So I wanted to ask you a few questions. This is kind of a short notice program, but James and I are such good friends that we can just carry on a conversation, and you all will find it so fascinating. What is happening up at the ranch with respect to UFO activity lately?
Well, you know, it's getting, everything's escalating. And we just had, a little over 2 weeks ago, we had 12 big golden ships just hovering over the ranch, and they were called into the sheriff's department. And what's interesting is that when we try to get the records and things like that, we keep running into dead ends, but I'm working on that. We have so many good friends up here, you know, people that are involved with dispatch or people that have scanners, whatever, they call me up and they said, hey, guess what? You know, they're here, they're calling them in again, you know, and so the reports were over and over that there was at least 12 large, golden disks hovering over the area here for quite some time, and you know, as usual, they have the, jet pursuits come in and then the UFOs disappear. Now there's something interesting about that. There's kind of a whistleblower that blew the lid off this whole thing, and he said with the spy satellites, they're set up with infrared and ultraviolet and also to detect any magnetic anomalies. And so they're monitoring this ship, a lot of these ships coming and going, and they're sending, you know, that's why the jets get there so quick, because, I mean, as soon as a ship flies over, the jets are, like, right there, and we're going, how are they scrambling these jets and getting them up in the air that fast, you know, when this ship just appears, other than they're actually monitoring, and they know, you know, very well that this is an ongoing event. And
they know exactly when they're coming in, because they pick them up way, way out before they ever reach the planet.
Yeah, and then you have Seth Shustak with SETI saying, oh, no, our top secret spy satellites, if anything was coming and going, I'd know about it, you know. And he's saying there's no UFO activity whatsoever, you know, there's no evidence whatsoever. And to me, I'm saying, oh, so when did you get top clearance security, you know, to be looking at all the spy satellites? I thought you were a private, you know, affair there. And, you know, so it's just amazing. And the latest thing, too, is they just published the kind of like the UFO handbook for all the fire departments, you know, what to do if there's a crash, what to do if there's contact, you know, how to secure the situation, how to, for
really?
The paramedics too, yeah, how to treat them.
Well, I think we need a copy of that handbook.
Yeah, it's, I just sent the link out, I'll send you the link, but, you know, it covers the book, and Ted Lauder with CSETI is actually the one that he has copies of it, and he's thumbing through it and showing it, you know, showing the whole thing.
Wow.
But, you know, it's pretty amazing.
That went out nationally to all the
fire
departments?
Yeah, it went out to all the fire departments.
Who was it sent out by? Was it the FEMA?
I don't know. It was two guys wrote it that were within the fire department. There are people within the fire department itself, and it might have been attached to FEMA. I'm not sure. I'm not sure who it was attached to, but I'll send you the link, and we can get all the details down.
Yeah, we definitely need a copy of that. That's like admitting that you're not admitting that there are such things as UFOs.
Exactly. So it's kind of a done deal now. It's, you know, with all the sightings with around Texas, everything, and the people coming forward, and Peru and Mexico with thousands of ships in the air. It's you know, if you don't know about UFOs by now, you're just not paying attention.
It's kind of interesting that the event that happened in Texas got a lot of media attention. I mean, really, you know, mainstream media picked it up, and then there was some reporterette that made a statement or some kind of report, and evidently she was called on the carpet and lost her job.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really know what that was about. What did she say? Did she say that the government was withholding information or something like that? Because normally reporters, you know, don't really catch that kind of flack unless they plagiarize something or they make up something.
So well, I do. The people that sighted the ships that went public are also getting a lot of flack, and they're being harassed by helicopters and all kinds of things over their ranches. So I tell you what, this ties into you as well. I don't know if you want to share this or not, but this will tie into your experience, because the UFOs are actually sending out all of these light symbols and, like, glyphs and things like that.
Really?
And people are monitoring these glyphs, and they're getting them, they're writing them down. It's on a Linda Moulton Howe site, and they're writing down the glyphs, and they're taking pictures of them, and then, which ties into Jim Sparks' experience, where they taught him to learn these glyphs and this, like, language of light and symbols, and it's all tying together. And I know you had your experience here. I don't know if you want to share that or not, where you were glyphed, I guess, by the mountain.
You know, I've tried ever since that day back in August of 2006 to sort of write down, you know, some of the symbols that kind of came in. And, you know, I'm good at AutoCAD and, you know, halfway decent at sketching things in my book, and I've kind of come up with some things, but it was so fast, and it came in at such a rate that it was very hard to remember it all. Mm-hmm. And the glyphs don't seem to have any pictorial value to them. They were like dots and dashes and circles, and I don't really understand what it was about, but it was definitely real, and it definitely seems to map out something. Every
yeah.
once in a while, something comes to me, or a person comes to me, or I'm introduced to an opportunity, and these flashes of awareness and cognizance come like it came from that day.
Uh-huh.
So a lot was, you know, downloaded at one time.
Uh-huh.
And it was difficult to keep up with. But
yeah, that's
you know,
what they do. It all gets downloaded into your. It's probably like a genetic download or something, but it's definitely in your subconscious, and it bleeds through as you need it. It's kind of all this information that you're going to need, and for the future. But I think it's interesting is that they're all seeing the same thing now. They're seeing these strange light symbols and glyphs or whatever coming from the ships, and it's all tying into. Together to several other people's experiences.
Right, right. Well, the interesting thing is that it, you're right, it does seem to be escalating. It seems to be going faster and faster and more people. It's
uh-huh.
I forget what survey it was done recently, but a certain percentage of the United States has not reported that they believe in UFOs, but that they have seen a UFO. And by the time you run the numbers, it's like 47 million adults in the United States have actually seen a UFO.
Uh-huh.
Now, that is something very, very remarkable.
Yeah, that's a major mass hypnosis experiment.
that's
what they try to say. But go ahead. They give details. I mean, they give details, and the details match. So how is that? You know, how is that some kind of, you saw a movie and, you know, that was in your mind and you went out and applied it to the experience or whatever. You know, they have all kinds of ways of trying to talk you out of it.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because you think, okay, well, I saw a light or I saw a shape or I saw a plasma and
mm-hmm.
did I really see it or did I not see it? You know, what is the nature of what I saw? And then you begin doubting yourself, and then
uh-huh.
pretty much it drifts into everyday life, and then you forget about it. It goes away. You don't pay any attention to it.
Yeah.
But when you have an experience that changes you, that sort of runs you through an ascension experience, and you're never the
uh-huh.
same after that, then that's something undeniable. That's like many of the prophets who... you know, saw the face of God and came down off the mountain a changed person forever. Just
uh-huh.
You don't go back to life as usual when that happens.
No, you can't. It's I have so many people calling me. It's just unbelievable. And they're all having very similar experiences, and it's tied into contact, light beings appearing in their rooms, you know, or peering outside, or, you know, seeing the ships and seeing wormholes and you name it. I mean, they're just seeing all kinds of incredible things, and you talk to them and it's all very similar. And, you know, these are pretty solid people that are having this experience, and they're saying, I can't deny the experience whatsoever, but as far as understanding it, that's a different story. You know, now they're trying to figure it out and put it in some kind of frame of reference that makes sense to them.
Well, it doesn't. In a sense, it does, because you think, all right, it's only logical that here we are on this planet, and to think that we are the only intelligent life in the universe is just ludicrous. You can call it, you know, base. You can call it ignorant. You can call it... I had somebody tell me the other day, well, if aliens exist, then they're devils, they're demons.
yeah.
Because God didn't say anything about aliens existing, and he would have told us about it in the Bible if it was true. And yet here you have clearly a quarter of the adult population in this country has actually seen one, So what do you tell those people? What do you do? You just say, you've seen devils.
Yeah, well,
I see devils on CNN.
Yeah. You know, it's unbelievable. A lot of the fundamentalist beliefs, you know, and they're in every tradition, every culture. They have a lot of times it's almost like a bipolar program going, but they, you know, good, bad, dark, evil. There's no in between. There's no gray area. There's no light gray or dark gray or black or it's just everything is evil or, you know. And I've seen people, you know, with everything. I mean, there's people that actually burn my books up here, you know, in Trout Lake. They go, oh, that's the devil, you know. And it talks about Jesus and the path of Jesus and the truth about Jesus and, you know, his real message and everything. And, you know, you give them this more unlimited understanding of what's going on, and they go, oh, no, you know, and they've got to burn it. And they just can't get around the fact that there's many mansions out there, that life is throughout the universe, and bodies are adaptations to environments, and there's so many different life forms out there. You know, that's like finding a new bug and saying, oh, it's the devil because it's not registered in the official insect book or something like that, you know.
Right.
The thinking there is just very limited. One of the things I asked them right away, I said, well, how big is your God? And they go, well, what do you mean? You know, and they said, is your God omnipresent? And they say, yes, you know. And I said, okay, so that means I'm God, you're God, all creation is God. And they go, oh, no. No, it's separate. And I said, well, how do you separate the creator from creation? I mean, where did creation come from? You know, according to your truth, you know, all of creation was created from the creator, so it's all divine. But how do you keep dividing all this up? And it really throws them through a loop. And then I said, well, I mean, is your God omnipresent throughout all the multiverses, you know, with all the planets and all the dimensions and planes out there? I mean, all of those are made up of that some essence. What is that essence, and is it intelligent? And it usually just throws them for a loop, you know, they don't come back. But, you know, when you try to take them outside their little box, but it seems like everybody has their little box, and, you know, all cultures have their boxes, and some people have stepped out of the box and are taking in a lot of new information, and some people are trying to maintain the little box.
Well, you have a couple of books called Becoming Gods.
Yeah.
And in these books, you talk about the prospect that we, humans, mortals, actually have within us the seeds to become gods.
Uh-huh.
And whether we're doing a good job of it or a poor job of it here on this planet, we sort of go through one or many millions of mortal experiences trying to gain perspective, empathy, mercy, grace, wisdom, knowledge, experience to fulfill our role as maybe even an adolescent god. So maybe you can go a little bit into that, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all this ties into the extraterrestrial experience.
It does. The best way I can sum it up is Meister Eckhart said that he had a, I think one of his sayings was, if nut trees produce, if nuts produce nut trees, and if pear seeds produce pear trees, what do God seeds produce? And he was a Christian theologian. And then there's, you know, a lot, all of the master yogis and things talk about the spark, you know, that divine spark within everybody that can unfold and become the full flame. It has that potential. And the way I see it is that we're multidimensional beings, and that we exist on a vibrational continuum. And so we have a physical body and a personality that we've developed in this sojourn on the planet. You know, we our spirit jumped into this little multicolored, multicultural birth suit, jumped in, took that on, and then people mistook that as their identity. But the truth of the matter is that they're a spirit. And they're so much more than just their body and their personality or their culture or their religion. They're beyond that. and in spirit has many levels as well. And so as you move up the vibrational continuum, you become more and more one with the source or God or whatever name you want to give it. And the more you expand in consciousness and focus on that pure, unconditional love and joy and bliss, the further up you move up the vibrational continuum. And you do that by dropping the fear and the guilt and the unworthiness and, you know, all the dogmas of separation that we've had, you know, drilled into us forever.
Right. Well, and so the dogma, the part that... you know, sort of corrupts us and makes us think that we're nothing but filthy rags or that we're here
mm-hmm.
for the pure entertainment of some judgmental being that sits out in wherever, in space somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and decides that this person's going to heaven and this person's going to hell based on how they, what, obey my commandments?
Yeah.
You know, and then you get kind of confused about it because then you say, okay, now which God are we exactly talking about here? Are we talking about the God of the Old Testament or the God of the New Testament? Because the God of the Old Testament was a little final about things. If you shorted the tithing a little bit, you died.
Yeah.
If you happened to be living on the wrong piece of real estate, you were going to have a Christian army come in and kill everyone and your animals and burn your fields. That's a little harsh, I think. Not much mercy there.
Uh-huh.
The God of the New Testament, the one that Jesus introduces us to, is a much different being.
Yeah, they were two different beings. They were two totally different beings, and one that, you know, excuse my, trespassing on some of the Jehovah's Witnesses, but the Old Testament God was Jehovah. And a lot of people go, no, Jehovah and Yahweh were the same. Well, they weren't. Because if they were, we'd have a totally schizophrenic God. But, you know, the God of the New Testament, Jesus brought the New Covenant. The New Covenant was the God of love and joy and peace, which is Yahweh. And so they're two different gods altogether. And people have a hard time with that, but we always have to realize, okay, who created them? Anytime you have a name and an identity, something created that name and that identity or that personification. So,
right.
There's another nameless force, some kind of consciousness and energy behind that that actually even created them. But you know, when you read the Old Testament, yeah, there was a very jealous, wrathful God, you know, at play, and you stepped out of line, you're toast. It was that simple. And then when you get more into the teachings of Jesus, you hear about this all-loving, all-forgiving, you know, compassionate God. And so you're sitting there going, well, wait a second. Either we have a totally schizophrenic situation here, or there's actually two different experiences going on, or two different beings, you know, going on, and that's what my research has led me to realize, is that the higher, more evolved Yahweh came in along with Jesus. And there's a prophecy that says, there shall come a great one that'll bruise the head of the one that bruised the head of man. And it was Jesus that came in with Yahweh, and they bruised the head of Jehovah, kicked him out, and then allowed, you know, humanity to heal the old wounds and traumas and scars of the past, which to this day we're still carrying, because, you know, people don't know. They go, is God going to punish me? Is God going to love me? Is God going to forgive me? Is God, you know, taking tallies, you know, with this? You know, is there a big fat book up there, you know, with every little bad thing I've done, and I'm going to be burned in hell for eternity because I haven't walked this perfect line? And, you know, and that's, unfortunately, you know, those people that have that concept are ruled through fear and guilt and unworthiness, and those emotions have a very dense frequency to them, and they actually cloud people from connecting with the God of pure, unconditional love and joy and bliss, which is the more highly evolved version. So beings have been coming and going to Earth and taking advantage of primitive people for a long time, and we have to get beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And realize, you know, that there is this infinite consciousness out there that that in its most unlimited understanding is just pure unconditional love and joy and bliss. And I had to die to figure that one out. My own drowning brought me to that realization and that experience.
Well, fortunately, I learned from your experience and experiences like yours, so I didn't have to go through that. But as a scientist, I look at it, and I see that, like any kind of spectroscopy, where, for instance, let's just talk about gas chromatography, all right? This is a really good sample. A gas chromatograph has a glass column in it. It's like a long glass drinking straw, only it's really small, about the size of a pencil lead. Lining the drinking straw is a coating on the inside of that column, and that column can either have a polar or nonpolar, like crystalline coating on the inside of that glass.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you start hydrogen gas going through that column in an oven, and then you inject your sample, and the sample is nebulized, which just basically means it's sprayed really fine,
uh-huh.
and it's drawn through that column. Now, what happens is the chemical mixture in your sample gets stratified inside that column based on its affinity for the coating on the inside of that glass. So some of the components get slowed down at different rates.
Uh-huh.
When they get out the other end, they go right into a gas flame, and they're burned. Now, when they burn, they put off some energy. That energy is picked up by a photo eye, and it's amplified by a photomultiplier tube. And that's how you do spectrographic analysis of an unknown mixture. Now, the reason this makes sense is it's kind of like a mortal life. We come to Earth, and we display certain affinities for things like fear or hatred or anger or love or peace and bliss. And what happens is we get stratified in the column of mortal life. And out the other end, when we go through the flame, when we die, we have judged ourselves by our own energy level in life. And when you come out the other end, you literally, if you're a dark heart, for instance, you literally cannot go where the light is because you cannot abide it. You're going to go where your friends are. You're going to go where you have an affinity, a likeness, a comfort. So when we think about some all-powerful bearded god sitting up there with a scepter who's counting every soul as it dies from Earth, and saying, hell, heaven, hell, heaven, hell, heaven, hell, go to hell, go to hell. It doesn't happen. And the reason that that judgment system is so just and works so perfectly is that we actually judge ourselves. That's what happens.
Exactly. Everything we've ever done is recorded in our soul as emotions, and we carry our own books. And we can actually forgive ourselves, but, you know, your soul knows if you're sincere or not, you know. And the catch is that people don't understand this, and this is the most blasphemous statement, but God doesn't have an ego, you know. It can't judge. It just says, as you wish. That's all it can do, as you wish, as you wish. And we create, according to our consciousness, in this plane of demonstration, you know, it's an action-reaction world down here, we create our own realities, and good and bad, you know, we magnetize people and events to us according to our consciousness, and we gain experience, you know, we gain wisdom through experience, and sometimes we have wrong conclusions from those experiences and are still carrying grudges and blames and guilts or things like that, and that's the dross, you know, that's the stuff that's weighing us down, and we need to go and drop that. And we need to realize, too, is that our image of God is very important, because if you have this judging, wrathful God that no one can appease, how are you going to ever turn to that source for a release of these energies, you know, for compassion and forgiveness? And that, you know, the reason compassion and forgiveness are unlimited on that level is because you were never judged. it's not, there isn't judgment on that level. It's beyond that, beyond the level of judgment, beyond the ego, the polarities, you might say.
Right,
and,
exactly right.
And that's what people have a hard time understanding, because they have this image that's just been, you know, smashed into them ever since they're a little kid of polarity and the good and bad, and, you know, you're a bad kid, you're a good kid if you do this. And, you know, that whole program has just been running ever since they're kids.
Well, you know, therein lies the dogma. Mm-hmm. That's where it's all scripted. And, you know, it might be, even if you exist in a rather, sheltered or unique or maybe separate from, quote, Christianity or Christian influences, you can carry forward from your own soul experience wounds that are really eternal in nature, and it takes a long time to either get over them, or you have to meet the right influence so that you can clear that soul wound off of you and thus be able to progress, to release it and let your life energy flow. And, you know, if the life energy's blocked up and you can't flow, then you're not progressing. And, oh, my goodness, do we meet a lot of people that are not progressing?
Yeah.
It's sort of like a soap opera. You're watching it, and you're really into it, and you know all the characters, and you like the program, and then your television breaks. Oh, my gosh. Well, then you move, and you get to a new city, and then you have a hard time finding a job. So then you get a job, and you raise enough money, and you get into an apartment, and then you say, gee, I'm going to buy a TV. So you buy a TV, and it's about 18 months after your last television set, and you go, gee, this is great. Hey, I wonder what the soap opera's doing. And you turn it on, and you pick up right where you left off, because you have not changed a bit.
Yeah, it's the same old program. What I've seen, too, is that, you know, basically we have this multidimensional body. And, you know, we have a body, and we have a personality, and we also have different levels, and we have an astral body as well. And within the astral body is where all the old wounds and traumas from past experience are carried. And we have to gain the right conclusion from those experiences so they can settle into the soul as wisdom. If not, they have a charge around them, and they just keep coming around again and again and again.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of Christians don't believe in reincarnation, but it's even in the Bible. You know, even, you know, Jesus said, you know, talking about, you know, John the Baptist, he said, this is Elijah who was to come.
We have a caller for you.
Okay. Yeah, Elijah was an old prophet who was,
right,
you know, in the past. Now he's with Jesus, so there it is right there. You know, here's Elijah reincarnated as John, and there's many, many cases in there. You know, so it's...
I think we have a caller on the line. Right. Let me honor this caller. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Mark from Nashville, Ohio.
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Egg. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Now that you're here, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I wondered if James had read much about the Billy Meyer case.
Yes, I have. I'll tell you something. I'm getting a lot of feedback here. I hope it's not coming over the line there. But we tried to work with the Billy Meyer people years ago when we first started having our contacts. And we sent them a DVD of, it was actually a video of the ships that are doing all the same things that he's experiencing there. And, you know, they're zipping all over the place and morphing. And even more so, we had some incredible footage of the ships. And so we sent them a video saying, you know, is this your same group that's coming here on a regular basis? And we got the most vicious letter back and, you know, chastised, called every name in the book. We couldn't believe it. And so,
wow.
So we said, okay, we're just going to put that on hold right now. Maybe somebody else got in the loop and wrote this letter, but then it was posted on their website. And so I gave a copy of another video that showed all this, you know, the ships, the pictures of the beings. It showed you know, everything from fuel is energy things to running everything, the other things I'm involved in. And so he hand-delivered it to him, and we got the same information again, you know, a real negative response. And I was trying to figure out what is going on with this group, because all I'm doing is saying, you know, look, here's activity here going on. We're receiving messages as well, and here's the evidence, and is this the same group? This is all we asked him. And, you know, the information we got back is basically he's the only true prophet of God on the planet right now, and he's the only contactee, and we found out he's pretty much viciously attacked a lot of other researchers and contactees, as well as crop circle researchers. He was saying all the crop circle researchers were, you know, made some very choice words concerning their intelligence, you might say, and said because they're all man-made, which later on he changed his opinion there as well.
So, well, you know, have you ever heard Randy Winters talk at all?
Yeah. Actually, I've had Randy Winters out here, and I also had Wendell Stevens has come out to the ranch as well. And they said pretty much the same thing. You either work with Billy, and if you work with anybody else outside the loop, he gets very irate and angry. And you know, I couldn't make any sense out of it whatsoever, and I've had Michael Horn attacking us constantly, you know, on radio shows and talk shows, and he doesn't make any sense at all, because we've got several thousand witnesses, and top physicists have come here, and, you know, astrophysicists, and Brooks here on the show has been here, and he's seen the ships, so, and experienced them firsthand, for him to keep saying that there's absolutely no UFOs here whatsoever is just beyond ridiculous. And then also he changed his tune later on and said, oh, they're just military. Because, you know, first he said there's no ships whatsoever, and then they're military. But we've had correspondence with Michael, and it's all been extremely negative, very judgmental, very rude, and there's no reason or logic there at all whatsoever, so we just cut off communication with them.
Well, you know, one of the things that Randy Winters said that I thought was very interesting is when he talked about how the Plejarans, I guess they call them, travel across space.
Mm-hmm.
According to Randy, the Plejarans actually, once they reach the speed of light, they convert their ship into something like tachyons, which
mm-hmm.
they consider to be like spiritual matter, and
yeah.
at that point they travel in something called null space, and that's where they travel faster than light, and they traverse these great distances, and then once they're done, you know, and where they want to be, they convert the ship and the occupants back into normal matter.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the if you dive into some of the information in the Billy Meyer case, you get some real interesting stuff. I didn't realize there was such a controversy there, though.
Well, yeah,
well, it's not that there's that much of a controversy. What I've found, and I've been, you know, speaking at conventions and expos all around the country for the last year and a half, and what I have found is that there's well, there's a tendency to eat our own young in this genre. It's sort of like there are not enough aliens to go around, and I have a franchise to protect. Now, here's what I found is my sort of litmus test. If the person has a day job, and their involvement with UFOs or UFO activity or contactees or things like that is something that they've either fallen into or is a hobby or a sideline or the thing they do on weekends, I give it a lot more credibility. But if the person is making a living on selling his ideas about UFOs, whether it be memorabilia, books, videos, whatever, then I get a little bit suspicious, because now it's sort of like dealing with the Egyptians who claim that they built the pyramids, or that they built the Assyrian, which clearly predates them by 3, maybe 4,000 years. They have a franchise to protect. Then I get a little bit leery about it, sort of like a paid clergy. You know,
yeah.
they can't very well deny the gospel, because well, they'll be out of a job.
Mm. Yeah, can I interject something there?
Sure.
The one thing is that we don't have a following. We don't take percentages of people's incomes to join. We don't have anything like that. And
right.
When you start getting into that kind of a program, like Brooks was talking about, you know, you know, then there's a vested interest, a monetary interest that you want to keep going. And then you can also fall into competition. And, you know, it's in your highest and best good to be the one and only, the one place that everybody's going to turn to find out about UFOs and, you know, get everybody signed up. But we don't have that program here. And another thing, too, is that what's sad is that in ufology, they do eat their own young. And this UFO enigma, some of the beings we're talking with are 2 million years ahead of us in the time flow as we know it. They're just pure energy, and their ships are pure energy. And some of the ships are magnetized light ships, and their bodies are light bodies as well. But
well,
they drop in. I'm sorry?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that the Plajarans talk about is that there are actually 7 stages of intelligent life.
Uh-huh.
They consider the Earth human to be in the 3rd stage. The Plajarans are in the 5th stage. And then they talk about these light beings that's from the Andromeda galaxy that's
exactly
in the 7th stage.
And you know, they have magnetized light bodies. And their ships are actually magnetized light. But they can drop in and make themselves physical. The higher beings can always drop down into the lower levels, but it's harder for us to go up and experience the higher levels. That takes a lot of spiritual practice, as you might say.
Well, it also, according to writings, takes a transfiguration, because the matter that makes up the human body and maybe even the human soul is not able to withstand that kind of energy level. So there's a temporary change in the physical matter that makes up the human body so that they can withstand the, quote, glory of God. Now, what James says makes a lot of sense, because even when Jesus returned after on the 3rd day when he was resurrected, he appeared to Mary and he told her, you know, touch me not, for I have not yet returned to the Father. The interesting thing about that is he stayed for 11 years and worked with those people, but in his light body, he came back not as an infant. He came back as a full-fledged adult in an immortal body, and yet he stayed 11 years, and he didn't take on the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Romans, not once. And the only things that were written, other than the Pistis Sophia, were a few witnesses' gospels, which were expeditiously removed from the canon, so you don't have them in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
But this light body that James is talking about, we now have scriptural evidence that it exists.
Really?
You know,
so,
it's all tied in. You can't really separate the divine feminine energies from the Pleiadian energies. They're hand in hand. You know, the same thing, the true gnosis of God, you know, according to the Keys of Enoch, originates out of the Orion system. So everything, you know, even in Amos and Job, it talks about the sweet energies of the Pleiades, and I believe it talks about the Orion system, so... You know, Ezekiel, you read that in the Bible, that was definitely an encounter, you know, with the ship when you read about it, because he talks about a metallic disc coming out of the firmament. It has bronze feet like calves. It has fire and brimstone coming out from underneath it. And when it landed, it sounded like 1,000 rushing rivers. So you utilize that information with today's knowledge, and you go, boy, that was definitely a landing, you know, a contact.
Right, right.
Well, there's just one other thing I wanted to bring up and have you guys comment on, and then I'll listen offline.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that Dr. Stephen Greer talks about is the unbounded mind, or
mm-hmm.
universal consciousness.
Yeah.
I guess, in other words, he says the total number of minds in the universe is really one.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess somehow our unconscious mind is actually linked to God's mind or the universal consciousness. And thanks for talking to me, you guys. I'll listen online, and thanks.
Okay,
all
thank
right.
you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Do you want me to tackle that one? Or
yeah, go ahead. Then we'll both work on it.
Yeah, the way it's explained to me is, as I was saying before, is we are multidimensional beings existing on a vibrational continuum. And if we just believe we're a body and a personality, that's all we are. But we're in truth, as we move up the vibrational continuum and start experiencing more of our true self, we start seeing more and more the oneness, you might say, of all creation. And in the last stages, you're still unique. You're unique, yet you're one with this incredible consciousness and energy, this light. And you're in that light. And you still have a sense of self, but there's really no separation between you and the light and this greater consciousness. And then there's even a level beyond that, which they call the void, which is quite boring, you know, because there's not much happening there. It's the void. But as I see, you know, when we're talking about the one mind, the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and all dimensions throughout the multiverses, mm-hmm. is that spark within each individual. And if we ignite that spark and start expanding, we expand into that one mind and start experiencing all the other planes and dimensions.
Well, and when we start experiencing those other planes and dimensions, we have no frame of reference. We are 3D beings, you know, seeing is believing. I want to touch you with my hands. And
oh,
so
yeah.
when we have this multiple dimensional experience, some people just say, well, gee, that was nice. I guess work starts Monday at 8 o'clock, right? and other people are changed forever. And, you know, sometimes very technical, very advanced people, even almost, you know, religious people, have had their course changed. And in doing so, have literally dropped fear from their lives. And they have become... If I can use the word, they have become light beings, even though they're in mortal form. And you can feel them when you're around them.
Oh, yeah.
And
you know,
go ahead. I was going to say, these individuals that you meet that are locked into avoiding scarcity, they want wealth, they want they want more than, well, they want wealth. And they're after it. I mean, they're just totally dedicated to it. That's all they think about. You see it in their websites. You see it in their newsletters. You know, the only thing that they want to do is become rich. They're so locked into the 3D that you just can't get around it. It's really an amazing dichotomy.
You know, once you've experienced beyond the 3D and you've really had that, with me, it was a near-death experience where I experienced the source itself. This world just kind of falls away. It's amazing. It just kind of falls away, and you're functioning on a different frequency altogether. And although you live in this world and you have to deal with it, you're just not very attached to it.
Sure, sure. Well, I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
This is Mona, and I'm calling from Oregon. Hi, James. Hi, Brooke.
Hey, Mona. How you doing?
Hey, Mona.
I'm good. I haven't seen you all in quite a while, but I'm looking forward to seeing you again soon. Coming up, what, 4th of July, James?
Yeah, we're going to have the conference. Brooks, Mona's the one that was doing the filming. Do you remember Mona?
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
Yeah.
How could anybody forget? Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
We saw her again down at M's place in Oregon.
That's right. I took your picture, in fact, you and Robin, down at Aquarius Water.
Interesting.
Anyway, my question is, when you're talking about the roles that people are playing in all of the dynamic in all of this, the UFO community and, you know, the various realities that we find ourselves living in and so forth. And I'm just wondering how either of you see the dynamic changing if you believe, like I believe, that we chart our own course before we come in to this incarnation or to any incarnation. So first off, do either of you believe that you chart your own course and what you come here to learn and to believe and to work on, and the roles that we're going to play with each other, the roles that you two, for instance, play to each other, and the roles we play with our parents and our kids and our mates and so forth. And when you factor that in to the different dynamics that you're talking about, I'd just like to get your take on what's going on from that point of view.
Well, James, I'll let you go first on that because I've got some some thoughts on that. And in about 4 minutes, it'll be top of the hour. We'll take a commercial break, and then I'll let you know my thoughts. Go ahead, James.
Okay. Well, the way it was explained to me is that the soul projects an outline into the quantum field with the beginning and ending. Although it's eternal, within this field has a beginning and ending, and it's your birth and your death and a lot of this outline of things you need to do. There's a lot of wiggle room within that outline, and we seem to get off course now and then, but we always seem to get back on no matter what. The universe just kind of puts us back on course again. And I see that on a higher level, we see how some beings will look down into what's going on here, and we can see how we can change things for the better and serve and assist in the awakening and healing process. And then, you know, sometimes we have our own stuff we have to clear as well, you know, along with the program. So, you know, definitely that works out. My role in the UFO community I saw was at the International UFO Congress when I was speaking there. I just kind of laid into everybody there and I said, you know, this is ridiculous. We have to stop competing. We have to stop fighting. There's plenty of people to go around. There's plenty of UFOs to go around. You all have a piece of the puzzle. And until we sit down and put it all on the table, only then are we going to see the big picture, because you can't pigeonhole this any way whatsoever. You know, because there are abductions going on. There are black projects. There are some low-level ET things going on. But most of it is benevolent, and there's extremely higher beings coming in right now, which I've chosen to come in and be kind of the ground crew or help represent them. And unfortunately, they aren't getting any representation hardly at all whatsoever in the UFO community. It's all mostly focused on the dark, you know, keep the black ops going, keep the money going, keep the threat going. And they aren't really covering the more benevolent side of it, that there are extremely evolved beings that are very spiritually and technologically advanced that could turn this planet around, but we have to earn it. You know, we have to rise to the occasion. So anyway, that's what I understand as I came in and incarnated to do, is to kind of get people to work together. And, you know, to me, if you look at it from an alien perspective, why would you want to come down and hang out with all these people who are fighting and bickering over who you are? You know, I would look down and go, oh, I'll come back in about another 1,000 years or something, you know, and keep going. You know, but, you know, that's what we've done here at the sanctuary. We've created this really high frequency place where people are rising to the occasion, and it's kind of a bridge. And my whole focus here, because I was on an intense spiritual journey, my whole focus here was not on UFOs. It is aiding in the wake and healing of humanity and the earth. And then they came along with the project. So that's their agenda as well, to assist us in this transition. And they have everything we need, even down to the physical, to turn this planet around. But again, you know, we have to bring that out as a possibility and let people know that we do have an alternative, and that the more people that wake up to this and start asking for this, that allows them to come in and start assisting us, because they won't trespass on free will or our evolutionary process.
All right.
Okay. All right. Hey, I'm going to listen to your answer off the air in case somebody else wants to call in. And be sure and give my love to Robin. And I'll
all right.
see you all 4th of July up at James's. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, we're going to go about 3.5 minutes of commercials, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back.
Life extends life.
To X Squared Radio.
Life expands consciousness.
Where the past meets the future.
The spice is vital to space travel.
We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. This is a 3-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, please let us know. We'll get a hold of your affiliate and fix it for you. My guest tonight is James Gilliland, also from Washington State. Our guest, we had a caller, Mona, called in, and she left a question. She said that, do you think that we come into this life charting our life? That we have an idea what it is we want to accomplish while we're here in this life. And I said that I would save my answer for the end of the break. And so here we are at the end of the break, and I want to share with you what I have learned. And this probably comes, it's probably going to be maybe a little bit much for people to handle, but you know, in this program, we regularly go past your imagination, and we make no apologies for that. So I want you just to open your mind and to try to accept this in the way that that it's intended. I do believe, in some respect, that we chart our course. That is to say, we decide where it is we're going to be born, to whom we're going to be born, what kind of area and time frame that we're going to be born in.
And we choose this by design. And we don't want to wait till the very end of the game. We don't want to wait till the very end of human existence, because one of the things that we can do while we're in mortal form is we learn things. When you're in the dream state, when you're in the spirit state, it's very difficult to stub your toe. You can dream about drowning, but until you do it, you don't really know what it's like, do you, James?
No.
You can dream about war and pain and illness and even love, but until you experience it in the flesh and it becomes part of a nerve experience for you, it isn't the same. Now, we know from reading the scriptures that one day of God's time where he lives is equivalent to 1,000 years of our time. Now, this is a huge difference in timelines. It's a difference in gravitational fields. If you think about it, Jesus has only been gone for 2 days. 2 days. Now, he could say, look, he could return now and say, kids, look, I've only been gone for 2 days, and look what you've done. But to us, it's 2,000 years. So we want to spread out this human experience. We're compressing 100 years of lifespan into the equivalent of 2 hours of God's time. Do you understand what I'm saying? So let's talk a little bit about that charting, that intention. What do we intend to do, and how do we interact with one another? Because it's easy to say, oh, I chart the course that I wanted when I came here. I've been loved, and I had a privileged life, and I went to college, and I graduated, and I got married, and I'm making 6 figures, and I have a Porsche and a Harley. Yeah, it's easy to say that I scripted a life like that. But let's think about this. Here's where the expansion comes. Let's suppose that you decide that you're going to come to Earth and you're going to be a soldier in a Viet Cong army. And then let's say another soul chooses to come to Earth to be one of the children in a village who happens to be helped by American soldiers who come in and, say, inoculate the kids against malaria. One of the humanitarian things that we did during the Vietnam War. And let's say that the Viet Cong soldier and the Vietnamese child come in contact one with another in their mortal lives, and the Viet Cong soldier has been tasked to collect all the arms of the children who have been inoculated. And so he follows orders, and he does so, and he piles the arms in the middle of the village. The children live, but without one arm. And then the soldiers come back in and say, oh my gosh, what have I done? So now you have three individuals who have interacted with one another. And believe it or not, all three charted their course on this earth. Now, what kind of love would it take for a soul to say, I will go to earth and I will be that child that you are going to victimize as that Viet Cong soldier. So you can go through that experience, and I will experience that. And you think, oh my goodness, how ridiculous, how utterly ridiculous that couldn't possibly be charted. And yet, we swallow quite easily the prospect that God sent his own son to a third world country to be treated like a vagabond and a heretic, and to be hanged on a tree by nails. He did that for us, so why would we not do it for one another with our own charting? And that is my feeling about charting your course coming to this world. I think we have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, it's Haya from British Columbia.
How are you, Haya?
Hello.
Hello. I'm pleased that you're both on. I have some extremely interesting information to give you. On the day of the eclipse,
yes.
I started taking pictures of the moon, and I wasn't getting the moon. I was getting glyphs. Kept on getting into my picture frame.
Really?
So out of five pictures, only one came out as, the moon. Other than that, everything else came out as glyphs.
Huh, what kind of camera were you using? Were you using a tripod? Were you using
I was on a tripod, and my camera is a Lumix.
Wow.
Low lux on 70, and it was set for night photography.
Well, tell us a little bit about the glyphs. Were any of them repeatable? Were they
No, they were different shapes. You know, I downloaded the pictures from Linda Mosnow on the UFO in Texas, and I compared them to the ones that I was getting. The only difference I found in them is that mine were white, but similar shapes. Where the ones that Linda had, or the person had taken of the UFO sighting in Texas, they were multicolored. Now, the next day we had a full moon in Victoria, and I was just trying out my camera for night vision, and it has a night vision mode on it. So I'm looking up at the moon and saying, oh my gosh, that's awfully bright for the moon, but my curiosity peaked, and so I put it on a 7-minute delay. So it was. I took this picture in night vision form, and it was 7 minutes apart on a time lapse. Well, when I put it into my computer, the moon didn't look like the moon. It was the center was bright, bright white. Then there was a ring around that of purple, light purple, and then another ring around that one. It was kind of like in green. But they were lighter.
Wow.
So it looked like the bottom was facing down, looking up into it. Well, as I kept on clicking the frames, all of a sudden out of the frame pops another little so-called moon, pink, big round pink one, and it has a little white nib on it, and then it flares out. It's kind of the shape of... badminton birdie, you know, it has like the bulb, the round bulb in the bottom, and it flares out from the top.
Right.
Well, this one looked like an upside down one. So it was the pink round bulb was on the top, and the flare of, it was like rims of color, right? And there again, I would get greens and blues in it. And as I clicked each frame, this little object kept on moving. And it moved further down, and the moon moved away from the trees and further up. And then I realized I must have caught something quite extraordinary.
Mm.
And then the next sequence, which was a frame, and this moon, or the supposedly a moon that I was taking a picture of, I don't think it was, though. You know, when you're facing bright light, and you have this beam of green light that goes through this so-called moon, and all of a sudden an object appears within that light, and it keeps on moving away and away at quite a speed. So I'm getting two different objects, two different things happening in this frame. It was just incredible. And then I talked to my friend last night, and he's in Harbor City, California, and he did some photography, and it was very wet out, and he actually got two extremely interesting objects. The first one looked like a cross, and it had very distinct colors on each side. It was like a red orb on each side of the cross, but different colors, like blue and a green one. And then it was rimmed. It was like there was an aura around the cross, and then there was another one that looked like an egg shape. And within the center, it was very, very bright white, and then it was a purple ring around that, and then it was like a green ring around that. And then above it, it was the shape of the egg. There was almost like three or four little orbs of different colors.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think these are?
I don't know, James. So you're more familiar with those anomalies than I am.
I'll tell you what happening here, it's really interesting, is, you know, the mountain, when it opens up, there's times where there's a huge white light cross in the very middle of the mountain, and we've seen ships come out of it. And other people have actually seen crosses on the bottom of the ships, which is quite interesting. And, you know, I'm getting lots of reports from people that are seeing the same thing, a white cross with different colored balls around it. And I just talked to someone today that was actually having that experience. So it seems to be happening all around the world. And what I understand, I was talking earlier about that, is these strange glyphs that people are getting. One person I know, Jim Sparks, was actually trained to read those by the ETs. And I would send them to him and see if he can make some kind of sense out of it. And if he can decipher it, be sure and let me know about it, or let Brooks know what
sure,
kind of information
he gets. Sure, I will definitely. I've also had some extremely interesting paranormal photography with my camera as well. It's like it's just the bend of light, the distortion of light. It looks like there's a distortion in the field itself. Just
uh-huh.
Incredible. It's you know, if I show it to people, it just totally throws them off. Because it's like, what on earth is it? It's like orbs and other phenomena.
And those are like torsion fields that are created. The orbs actually create these distortion fields as well. And it's almost like doorways into other dimensions, and your camera can't really focus in on them, so it just gets a distortion, and then you'll see distorted things in the film as well.
What I've been getting is just incredible, and, you know, people wonder how I'm doing it, and I, you know, I just believe, and I know they're there. And
yeah, there's
it's
a...
like, I sense them, you know, it's not
uh-huh.
like... It's not like somebody says, hey, you know, it's just like an innate sense of knowing they're going to be around.
Well, you know, I've seen is that the person taking the pictures is much more important than the camera itself. And you'll get people that come out here where it's just orb central. There's all kinds of paranormal activity. And I've seen people come out here and not get anything. And then I'll walk out and start talking to them, and then I'll say, let me see your camera, and then I'll take a picture, and there's orbs everywhere in the photograph. And when they see that, then they start believing it, and then they start taking pictures again, and then they start seeing them again. So there's definitely a conscious interaction with these other beings that needs to be there. Or, you know, you might get lucky and catch one or two now and then, you know, taking pictures of your kids or something like that, because... You know, they're wide open, but...
Well, I've taken pictures inside my house, and I've had the orbs in the house. I had it over the children. I've had it at my friend's place. And everybody wants to know, well, I do pictures, and how come I'm not getting anything? I said, well, try harder, that's all.
Yeah.
You
have
know,
to believe it to see it. It's the opposite.
I know. But, you know, people say, oh, an orb is an orb. But you know what? I'm finding them fascinating. I mean, there's different orbs. Like, some of them are opaque that look like mandalas. I've got some absolutely brilliant, brilliant, like, orange, like pumpkin orange red ones.
Uh-huh.
They're solid. And then I have lighter, like, tangerine colors that come in that are solid. And then I have others that are translucent.
Yeah, we're going to cover a lot of that in Palm Springs. I'll be down there speaking at the Orbs Conference with Michal and Hope and Randy Mead and some physicists as well, talking about orbs and the other dimensions and things. And up here, July 4th, we're going to have a lot of these people here as well showing their new releases and their movies and actually
so,
yeah,
so photographing. So the conference is July the 4th for sure.
Yes, July the 4th.
Oh, it's going to be dark. It's going to be hard, difficult roads. Isn't it your Independence Day?
It sure is. But you're going to become independent of the old recycled ignorance and all of the nonsense when you come.
I will be there. This time I'll have my computer, I'll have my external hard drive, and I'll have my two cameras.
Oh, good.
Because I've got so much that I think you find interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I've sent you so much. I don't want to over inundate you with information. My friend Philip will be down actually to your Palm Springs conference, and I think he's going to bring a DVD down with him just to be on the safe side. If he doesn't see anything that I've been pulling up or he's been pulling up, he might just, you know, show them to you there. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I suggested that he do that, you know. But what does the pink and the purple now? I'm also noticing that there's a very brilliant blue. And my friend Philip picked up some really brilliant blue objects.
Yeah, those are some really high beams. Those, what I've seen is the pink ones are just, you know, pink is that pure love frequency. And each light ray has a frequency to it. And the purple ones are extremely spiritually advanced beams. And I've seen some purplish blue ones, and those are actually ETs projecting their consciousness out.
Now, what would the orange ones be?
Orange is, it's like that divine intellect or whatever. It's more of a teaching frequency.
I've got a
right.
lot of
orange,
them around.
I've heard orange was associated with the awakening that's happening now.
Uh-huh.
And I've heard several people on this program and others talking about orange energy that seems to be going out there in large amounts, and it is associated with teaching and awareness,
yes.
Awakening.
Well, at first I started pulling in blue energy, and now I've been pulling red energy, orange energy. Now I'm getting pink and turquoise.
Yeah, the pink and turquoise, there's a lot of people bringing in channeled information, and they're saying that there's two bands of energy that are coming in very strong right now to the Earth, and one is pink and one is turquoise. And to me, green is healing, and blue is love and wisdom. So if you combine those two, you have a ray that has both healing energies and love and wisdom together. And then pink is just that divine feminine love, you might say.
Well, we certainly can use that on the planet, can't we?
Definitely.
I'll let you go so other people can talk.
All right, thanks
all
for
right.
calling.
Thank
and
you.
And have
so
a lovely Maya. Evening, both of you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. So we were talking at the top of the hour about the charting of a mortal life.
Uh-huh.
And we come into this life, you know, as babies, with our memories wiped clean, and then we're almost re-scripted by our parents. And somewhere about the age of adolescence, we start recalling our own course. And sometimes it's much to the chagrin of those who are acting as our parents, because, you know, you might have been, you know, brought to a very religious family or a very a-religious family, and you might be displaying behavior that's quite a bit different than what your parents had in mind for you. No, we wanted you to be a doctor. Why do you want to be a professional baseball player? And, you know, there's a song done by the Moody Blues, and in the song it says, what you want to be, you will be in the end. And hopefully you get a chance to do that in your mortal life. And I would ask you, what is your dream? When I ask people this question, it doesn't matter where I'm at. I like to sing, and sometimes I go out for karaoke and I sing. Or sometimes I go to a sports game, or sometimes go to the movies, or just working. And it'll come up. You know, people will say, you know, I don't really know what I want to be. I don't know what I want to do. And then I ask them, well, okay, what is your dream? And you should see the look of reflection on the face of the person to whom I ask this question. Because at first it's a look of like, well, what do you mean, what's my dream? And then I'll catch that look, or they might actually say it. And then I'll say, well, you remember, when you were a little boy or a little girl, you had a dream. You wanted to be something. I don't mean you want to have something, but what is your dream? And you'd be surprised. Sometimes people say, the women, they'll say, well, I want to marry a rich man and have a big house. And that's a real easy one to respond to. I'm kind of used to it by now. And I say, well, okay, so what happens if you marry the rich man and you get your house? You're then going to sit in your house and die? Because life is complete? You've accomplished everything? And then they get another puzzled look on their face. Well, I guess I didn't set my sights high enough. I have another friend who also has a talk radio program, and I asked him the other day, well, you know, what is it that you want? And he said, well, I still have my goal set for that $1 million. So if you figure out a way for me to get it, you be sure to tell me. And I said, well, why do you want the $1 million? And he said, well, to move my family from this foreign country where they live to here. And, you know, so that I can send my son to college and so that I can have some security in life so I don't have to worry about, you know, what I'm going to eat and what I'm going to wear. And so I said to him, so what you're telling me then is your dream is not the $1 million. The dream is moving your family from this foreign country to here, having a safe, secure home, and sending your son to college. If you could have those things, then you wouldn't need the $1 million, right? And he said, well, yeah, that's right. And I said, so what you've done is you have drawn your own future thread to your goal. And you've blocked the universe from providing you those things because you've only allowed the universe to do it one way, and that's through the $1 million. You probably don't need the $1 million. There's another way for that to happen. I think what happens is when people chart their lives in this world, they come in and just exactly like James says, they get locked up in the dogma, they get locked up in the fear and the cycle of self-perpetuating defensive mechanisms. That's a fancy name for a church. And they drive themselves into a little box of fear. And they just can't seem to think their way out of it. They just can't understand why they're not getting what it is that they've imagined to have. So we have another caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hey, Brooks. Hey, James. It's Juliana.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. You guys were talking about the symbols or whatever those things are we're all getting in the sky.
Yeah, the glyphs that we're picking up on our cameras. What are those?
Well, you saw the ones I sent you today, James, right?
Yeah, I did.
I just came in from outside, and you should see the ones I'm getting tonight.
We got some new ones, huh?
Yeah, so I'll send them over to you tomorrow. But you were talking, James, about, you know, the people stop arguing and fighting and getting together and putting their information together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 100% right. This is my third time calling into the show tonight. I wasn't going to call in and say anything, but as I kept going outside, I knew I needed to call in and say this. What I get, I leave almost every night. Do you know on your SETI site, where you have that sound on there with the boom, boom, boom sound with the ship?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the mothership.
Okay. For years, I never knew what that was until I heard it on your site. When I heard it on your site years ago, I guess about 4 or 5 years ago was the first time I heard it on your site. And I almost passed out. I couldn't believe it. Every single night, I would say at least 5 nights out of a week, as soon as I go to bed, I will hear that sound, and I will feel a vibration right in the middle of my chest, and I know within seconds I'm gone.
What is that vibration like? What is the frequency of that vibration? You said boom, boom, boom. What is that?
Yeah, it's on the website. I have the sound of an Orion mothership that was actually hovering over Portland State University, and
it's
I captured. It's a very deep pulse, and it sounds like a cat in space. That's the only thing. That's what people say. It's very low, very deep. If you don't have a good stereo system, you can't hear the full magnitude of it because, you know, a lot of the computer systems just can't grab the bass, but it's a very, very deep bass, and it's a humming, kind of a throbbing bass, you know?
Okay, and okay. I got a couple things here. Giuliani, you said that you feel this pulsing in the middle of your chest. And does it sort of feel like a low but palpable puff of air against your chest, like, you know, that like that?
It's very soft, and it's very relaxing. No matter how tired I may be, as soon as that starts, I get extremely peaceful and tranquil. And I get very relaxed. And I can be laying there in bed wide awake, talking to my boyfriend or with my animals or whatever. And within seconds after that starts, I'm out out like a light, and I'm gone. And I have never.
What are your dreams like when that happens?
I go all over. The only thing I can tell you is that I can't tell you the name of the places that I go, but I can tell you that they look like planets. They look like worlds. I go and I meet people. I have never seen anything like grays. I have never seen anything that looked anything but like people, nice people, women. I'm with a lot of women, very
what
few men.
Like? What are their physical characteristics of the women that you see?
You wouldn't be able to tell them and us apart if you were sitting down having dinner with them.
Okay, what color is the hair?
Just like ours, different colors.
And what do they typically wear, and how do they live?
Clothing. Some places I go, like for instance, this was sometime last year. I'm not good with dates, I'm not good with times and all that kind of stuff. I don't wear a watch, I don't look at a clock or anything like that, so I can't tell you what month this was, but it was sometime last year on one of the nights when I left. I went to this place where it was like an underground type of place when I came there. The doors were all arched. The floor was like a sandy soil that was, I have never been to Arizona, but I've seen pictures of the color of the rocks out there in pictures. The soil on the ground was that color, as well as the walls in this place where I was, and the doors were all arched. And when I went there, I was just like floating a few inches maybe off of the ground. I was doing inspections in there. I was checking and making sure that the work that had been done there was complete. That's exactly what I was doing.
Okay.
And,
I need to ask you some more questions. Did you look up? What did the sky look like?
I wasn't outside. I was down under in this building or whatever this was, house, whatever it was. It was a roof. The walls were like made of the same color of sand type of stuff as the ground. So I didn't see up top. But what I did see was this. I'm not going to call any names, because someone that you all know too floated in right after I did, and he came up to me and he said hello, and I was so glad to see him. And he left and went out through one of these arched doors, and I followed him, talking with him. And when I got to the area where he went outside. And when he went outside, I was standing in the arched door. I didn't look up, but I looked straight out. And straight out was like a bright white. It was like a daylight, but not like a daylight like you see here. It was like a white light, a soft white light. It's really, really hard to explain. And he went out there, and he was doing his work out there. And I went back into this place, this house, building, whatever it was. I don't remember a lot of things that we talk about, and they tell me when I come back. Certain things I do remember. So it's like, I think that I only am supposed to remember certain things. I'm not sure, but I think that's the way it is. But this is a message that I constantly bring back with me when I go. And we ladies always talk about this, and they always say that right now we're at a very, very critical time here on Earth, and that it's very important that we grow up and stop all of this separation, conquer, divide, fighting. We need to start forgiving. We need to start getting along. We need to start loving one another. One of the things
here's my feeling. Just let me interject this a little bit, because this might help unify the community. What I have witnessed in the thousands of miles and hundreds of hours that I've spent out on the road at these various conventions is there are two camps, basically. Used to think there were more, but there's just two. One is the camp that teaches and preaches fear, and the other ones steer far from that and teach light and love.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two camps. And for some reason, and I can't figure it out yet, the organizers of the events seem to gravitate and enumerate, shall we say, the fear-based ones. Those are the ones that sell 20 million books. Those are the ones that make it on the radio or on television or even have their own programs, nationwide programs, is the fear-based ones. And I don't know, I know from my friend Michal, who says that fear is at least 40 times more powerful of an energy than love. Maybe it's that people are attracted to that, and they find it so easy to fear and so easy to be attracted by fear, because they themselves, as truncated mortals, are fearful.
Mm-hmm.
But when those of us that have a quite different presentation, one of hope and one of enlightenment and one of do you know who you are and what you're capable of becoming, then you see the light come on in people. And then you see something quite different. And it's really an amazing transformation. Now, when you go to this place and you feel the atmosphere that's there, is there any fear there, Juliana?
None whatsoever. None in me or none in them. We talk just like I'm talking to you guys right now, really just even nicer than we're talking, because we're so relaxed. It's such a familiar feeling. It's like I'm with some people that I have known forever. It's like I don't have to worry about how I express myself. I don't have to worry about what I say, because it's not like if I say something, somebody's going to get their feelings hurt and take it the wrong way. You understand what I'm
saying? How many times have you been there? How many times have you gone there, Juliana? Do you always go to the
same? This has been happening to me since I was a child. From the time I was a child, I was seeing these people. But when I was a child, I thought they were people. And then I never knew anything about UFOs until I had my first UFO experience in 1987, when one landed on the side of the road on 75. And myself and my ex-husband and my best friend was going on vacation to the mountains up in the Carolinas and in Tennessee. And that night at 12 o'clock, I had this experience. And I had never seen anything like that before. My friend told me what it was, and we were like making a spoof about it. But that's a really long story, and I can't get into that right now because I don't want to take all the time on your show and take time away from other people.
The reason I'm asking you such questions, I really can't go into right at this moment. But I just want to ask you, did you happen to see, did you happen to smell the bread? Did you smell the bread there?
I've been different places. I don't go to just one scenery, one type of place. I've been, there's times when I go where there's crowds of people sitting out in green fields with beautiful trees, and they're sitting out there just talking. There's times when I go to places where they have like fruit and flowers and it's like a big party. I've never seen anything like alcohol with anybody. I've never seen anything like anybody using any kind of drugs. I've never seen any kind of violence. I never see children. I see women. I see women, young women, women like from maybe teenagers, 18, 19, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, some older women, like maybe in their 50s, 60s, but I never see anything bad. It's always an incredibly joyous experience. I'll tell you this, it is so good that I have in the last 4 years of my life, looked so forward to this that I was a person that I used to go to bed like 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I was a night person. Well, in the last 4 years, the only thing that keeps me up late is Saturday night because I live in Florida and James comes on BBS at 11 my time. I stay up late to listen to Don and Wynn and then to listen to James at 11, and that's what keeps me up late at night. And then I listen to your show every Sunday night. But every other night, I'm in bed like 8:30 because I want to leave here. I want to go.
Yeah, I know it exactly what you mean.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
It's so nice. I don't want to come back. And they all tell me the same thing. They tell me, I was talking to him the other night, and I said, why don't you guys come and help us? Why don't you come and just clean up this earth and give us all this beauty that I read about and hear about that you can do and help us? And they were kidding with me. And they said this, and one of the ladies said to me, she said, you know, if you have a child and through that whole child's childhood, you clean that child's room and never teach that child to clean its room. Well, as soon as the child's room is clean, the child will go back into it and mess it all up again once it's clean. And I looked at her and I said, so what's your point? And she started laughing and she said, if we come and do it all for you, you're going to just do the same thing all over again. You got to do this for yourself. We'll help, but you got to learn to get along with each other. You got to put all the pieces that we're giving you together. Like with these things that I'm getting, these pictures that I'm getting that I sent to James. I was shocked today after I sent these to James. I was on the computer trying to look around and read some other stuff on the computer, and I came across a blog that I read every day. It's called Earth Watchers and Sky Watchers. And I went on Sky Watchers, and there was the blog on there about, they were asking if anyone had seen Linda Howey. And I went in to see what it was about, and I was shocked to see the article that she had written about these glyphs, they're calling them, I think, and talking about Mr. Sparks. And on the site, there was this thing laid out, just like they had showed me that I had written and told James about. They told me, they said, each one of us that's getting these pictures and getting this information, what we need to do is all come together. And they showed me they put it up like on this big board thing. That's not really what it was. It wasn't a board, but I don't know how else to explain it. Anyway, they put everything up there, and they said, once you all come together and put all the pieces together, because there's lots of us that's got this information, they said there's a very profound, important message in all of this, and you'll get it. But we're spending too much time, you know, like my picture is better than yours, or I know more than you, you know, type of thing. And James is so right. That is, all we're doing is destroying our own self, our own world, and our own life, because they all tell me, this is a critical time, we don't have a lot of time left, we need to grow up, we need to start getting along. They even say, how can you get along? Why should we come when you can't get along with yourselves? How are you going to get along with us?
Yeah.
That's true.
Exactly,
we have to rise
right
to the occasion.
Exactly. And I was one of the ones that was always writing James years ago and saying, when are they coming? You know, and getting all stressed out and freaked out. James must have thought I was as crazy as a fruitcake, you know? But after they started telling me all this stuff, I started realizing, it's us that's got to do this. And I think from what Mr. Sparks was saying, that there's people out there that's got this technology and got information that they can give us, but they need some kind of paper signed where they wouldn't get in any trouble or anything for what they've kept from us. I think we should all sign it. And who cares? Who cares that they lied to us? That's not the point. The point is, we're at a critical point. Let's grow up. Let's forgive.
Yeah,
let's get together and clean up the earth.
We don't want to put anybody in jail for withholding information from
right.
us for 50 years.
Should give them medals. Should give them
yeah.
medals
right.
for bringing
them.
It out instead.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Forgive them. Give them hugs. Give them hugs. Give them love.
Uh-huh.
Thank them. Work together with them. This is the only world we got. This is
just
the only
place.
Just let
them come to the sanctuary, and they'll feel right at home, right, James?
Exactly. You'd be surprised who comes here. I mean, people involved in a lot of the back engineering skunk works things, and they come, and it's like confession time. And they
mm-hmm.
they know I'm not going to rat them out or do anything, and they have to tell somebody, and it's really tearing at them on the inside, because they know we have the technology to clean this planet up, to heal almost every disease. We have incredible technology that's being withheld from the masses, and it's just eating them from the inside out, and they want to bring this out, and, you know, it all goes back to the leadership and the people waking up to the fact that this is available, this is there, and demanding that it come forward, and supporting
sure.
the people that want to bring it forward.
Sure.
Exactly.
Juliana, thank you so much for the telephone call, and you can call in to X Squared Radio anytime. You are welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank Julian. You. I'll send you those pictures tomorrow, James.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, have a great night, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I would be interested in seeing some of those as well. I'm not familiar with Linda Moulton Howe's article.
Yeah.
I will say that, you know, of all the people that I've met over the years and that I've communicated with, she is one of the hardest working journalists in the world. The places that she goes, the people that she talks to, the questions that she asks, they're hard, and she goes beyond the mark of getting all the information out to us that she can get to us. And, you know, she's taken her flack for her position and her diligence in bringing us these facts for a long, long time, and she's definitely
mm-hmm.
one of the champions out there.
Yeah, I'd share these pictures with you, but they're my contact and my pictures.
Pardon me while I laugh on the air.
I'm just giving you an example of what happens in the UFO community. I share everything. You know, all my footage, everything I take here, I share it. People go, do you have any really good footage? Yeah, check it out. You know, I want to make a movie. Sure, take it. You know, and, you know, it's all about educating the people. And, you know, I'm not getting paid for all these interviews I'm doing or you know, little spots in these movies. You know, I'm waiting for some big check to come. Nothing's happened. But it's more important to get the information out, you know, and it always comes back to you anyway. But it's kind of insane, you know, going back to that, what's happening is that, you know, you hit it, the nail on the head, the fear and the suspense, it makes the bucks. And the ones that are pushing that and creating new demons and new things to be afraid of and new threats and all of that stuff. Those are the guys that are getting all the airtime and, you know, coming on, you know, getting all the news coverage and everything else. And, you know,
as listeners out there, you might, you know, hear a little tinge of jealous energy in James and I, but it's just that, you know, we spend a lot of time and we speak to literally tens of thousands of people every year about these
mm-hmm.
things. And over the years, I can tell you, if you make your way up to the ranch on July 4th, you will see hundreds and hundreds of people that come. Year after year, it gets bigger and bigger because this is where the consciousness of UFO openness is beginning to assemble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it comes together. I mean, it's intense, it's loving, it's enlightening, and it is an amazing feeling. If you have a chance to get up there, get a tent, get a sleeping bag, go up there, sleep in the echinacea field under the stars, and you're going to have an amazing experience. I can tell you that. I've been up there twice and more times than that. I intend on going again this spring and then again in the summertime, and I can promise you, you're going to have an experience. And James has been gracious enough to come on X Squared Radio tonight, even though he has his own radio program Saturday night. James and I have been friends for a number of years, and how you see us kid and cut up is exactly how we are. We're just little boys in middle-aged bodies, but that's the kind of fun that we have.
I told you, somebody asked me just the other day, somebody asked me, they said, well, you know, you did all these things as a kid, you know, and they said, so what happened after you grew up? And I started laughing, and I said, I never did. And I said, you know, growing up kind of sucks. I'd rather just kind of keep in my childlike bad humor and have fun.
There you go. There you go. That's what it's all about. Well, we are going to take another break here in about 2 minutes or 3 minutes. I think we have another caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from?
Good evening, Dr. Agnew. This is Jerry. You know me, Blue Pond is Burning.
Yes, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I've been missing you on the internet. It's almost 3 weeks now. But I thought I had a call in tonight.
Well, what happened this last week is Senator Maria Cantwell decided to schedule a visit to a new biodiesel plant that I'm building here in eastern Washington State. And so we were all about washing the floors that night, getting our plant all up to shape. It is a construction site, so it's a little hard to make it look like a plant. But we did that, and she came on Tuesday, and we had an absolutely awesome meeting with a wonderful lady, a wonderful senator. She's bright. She is very committed to seeing biofuels become a reality, and our technology.
Did you give you guys a good earmark? I was watching a documentary on that the other night.
Yeah, actually, I was watching C-SPAN today in the Department of Transportation. The secretary was on there, and they were talking about earmarks for fuel. The good news is that the company that I work for, and I'm not here to do a plug for them, but the company that I work for has been very active in sending information and press releases to Washington and was instrumental in getting the biodiesel legislation passed about 5 years ago, and then this, about 2 months ago, another $1.2 billion was set aside for cellulosic ethanol, and that was a direct result of an international press release that was faxed to every congressman and every senator from our company, and it was that pushed it over the edge and got that passed. So now that grant money is available so that we can shift the ethanol business away from food sources to non-food sources like wood chips and switchgrass and corn cobs and
that sounds great. You guys will have the biodiesel set up by the time I get in the car, right?
It's set up now. This plant will produce 16 million gallons a year, and we're going to build several of these.
Well, it sounds like a good plan. I didn't call to bore everyone about the biodiesel. We could talk about that any other time. I called to speak to you and your guest. I have another thing, two subjects. The very beginning of the show, you guys, and throughout the whole show, you guys have been talking about the glyphs and everything, and I'm pretty sure I've sent you some of my artwork, and I channel these books all the time. And if I sit around and I meditate or I clear my mind and put my hand out there, I'll start drawing with my fingers. I can't help it. And I drew one for you guys. It's on the website. If you log on, that's why I mentioned that in the beginning. If you log on, I'll send it to you. You can email or email it later. But
all right. Let me get the other computer fired up. We'll get the AOL Instant Messenger fired up, and you can send us those.
All right. Well, while you're doing I have... Hello?
Yeah, sorry, here. Just let me take a very quick 3-minute break. Through the commercials. Just hang on through the commercials. Don't go away, and we'll be right back after these messages. And what we will do is I will turn on the other computer, and we'll try to get the AOL Instant Messenger going, and that will allow us to get this information, and we'll try to post it on the website if we can tonight so that you can see it. We are very interested in this subject, and we want to get to it. So hang on, 3 minutes, we'll be right back. Don't go away, all right?
No problem. I'll be here.
Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVP 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer.
There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today.
If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have cracked... Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're here, coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. It's clear and cold outside. That's my AccuWindow forecast. And I got one little bit of news here. Today on the sun, something exploded and hurled a bright coronal mass ejection into space.
Now, coronagraphs on board the Solar and Heliospheric Observatory caught the blast. The cloud is not heading toward Earth. The source of the explosion is beyond the sun's northeastern horizon, where the blast site remains hidden. Is a sunspot just around the bend? We'll see. The sun's rotation may bring an active region into view in the days ahead. Readers or listeners with solar telescopes, please stay tuned. Also, a Virgin Atlantic jumbo jet has flown between London's Heathrow and Amsterdam using fuel derived from biofuel. Environmentalists have branded the flight a publicity stunt and claim biofuel cultivation is not sustainable. Virgin boss Sir Richard Branson said the flight marked a vital breakthrough for the entire airline industry. He says, "This pioneering flight will enable those of us who are serious about reducing our carbon emissions to go on developing the fuels of the future." But he said fully commercial biofuels were likely to use feedstocks such as algae rather than the mix used on the passenger list flight. Green Star Products is the world leader in algae technology, along with its consortium of United Biorefineries Corporation. We want you to keep track of that company. Their stock symbol is GSPI. You can keep tabs on what they're doing in new energy technology by just going to greenstarusa.com. My guest tonight is James Gilliland, and we have a caller on the line who is a regular on our instant messenger line. And one of the subjects that we've been talking about tonight is the advent of these glyphs that are showing up, very energetic but geometric patterns that are showing up in cameras taking space shots. We've had shots of the lunar eclipse, and we've had shots that Linda Moulton Howe is posting on her website, and now we have who we call Lupin is Burning on tonight. So are you still there?
I'm still here. I've been waiting the whole time.
All right, all right.
What's it called? One thing real quick I'd like to ask your guest, James, or talk about on the night of the lunar eclipse. I actually had a really cool thing happen to me. Is I went out and saw it. I live in Brooklyn, New York. Not really the best place in the world for stargazing. A lot of light pollution, you know, and many buildings blocking the sky. But I did go out and see it. It was very beautiful. And strangely, that night before I went to bed, I was sitting here staring out my window looking at Venus like I do every night before I go to bed. And I saw a flash of light. And I live over Brooklyn, New York. I live by the bay. There's tons of planes going in and out of JFK all the time. I'm used to seeing them blinking back and forth, and I'm well aware that there's no UFOs or, you know, they're not common occurrence. I don't delude myself. But this appeared in the middle of the sky. It flashed. It was a bright golden color, maybe like a white, yellow, I don't know, color I see in my third eye all the time, but it was pretty physical, I'm pretty sure, and it flashed, and it moved about an inch, and then it flashed, and it was gone again. And it was pretty cool. I haven't seen a UFO since I was a little kid, and what's it called, and it was really exciting, and, you know, I went to bed. But strangely enough, I logged on to my computer the next day, and I was talking with one of my other friends who's into astronomy and astrology and all that other stuff, and he's one of us, and he said that he saw something really similar, too. Well, he was stargazing. He said only his was green. He said the green flash showed up and made a right angle and then disappeared. So if James is still on the line, I want to know if he saw anything similar, I guess, that night.
You know, actually, there's what's really interesting is we've had things happen here at the ranch like that where they just power up and make a quick turn and then take off or whatever. And one person will see it and say, like you're saying, one person will see it and say, you know, it was green. Another person will say it was gold. Or another person will say it was white. And what's really interesting is that we all saw the same event, and we saw it differently. Each person saw it differently. And, you know, I was kind of thinking that maybe it was the because of the light spectrum, some of us can see higher up into the light spectrum because of our spiritual evolution, you might say. And so we see different colors of the experience or whatever's going on. But it is a phenomenon. You know, I had a funny thing. I went out to film the eclipse, and we have like 5 feet of snow on the ground up here, almost 6 feet. And if you can walk on top of it, but every once in a while you fall through.
Yeah.
And you go all the way down, you know. And I was trying to get out to where we could see the moon because we have all these trees lined up, and I had to get around to this field to where I could see the moon. And I was carrying all my gear, you know, a camera and a big tripod and all that stuff and another still camera. And I got right out to where I could see the moon. I go, oh, this works. And all of a sudden I fell, like went down through the snow. And, you know, I had to get out. And while I was getting out of that, I got everything all set up again. And right when I was getting everything set up, I said, you know, I can really feel them. It'd be so awesome if one just flew right in front of the moon. And, you know, I can put that up on the site. And I could feel a presence. There was definitely, you know, they were in the area. And then, so the next thing you know, I turn around, I look behind me, and just by shifting my weight, I fell through the snow again. And here's this UFO coming in right behind me with my tripod stuck in the snow. I'm down in the snow and my camera, and I, you know, I could swear, I almost like they're laughing on the ship or something, but, I saw it, but I didn't get any pictures of it, but it was kind of funny. But I was hoping they would fly right through because I had the camera going on the moon, but they came in behind me and made a turn and then took off.
That's their sense of humor, is that kind of irony where you try so hard and then they give it to you, but you never get the whole of what you asked for. And hey, you asked for this, you didn't specify this and that.
Yeah.
They say, oh, you wanted us to fly by the moon. You never said that you wanted your camera to be perfectly straight or anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, great sense of humor.
But they do show themselves to people, and you could have two people standing there, and one person will see that flash and see the ship, and another person might not see anything.
How open your third eye is when it comes to that.
Yeah. And one time we were out in the middle of the field, and they illuminated the area around us from the ship, and a big ship came over, and there was no beam between them and between us. It was where we were. All of our faces lit up. The whole field just lit up, but there was definitely not any kind of a beam between the ship. So they have that ability to, like, bilocate light or put light right in front of somebody to see it and where somebody else may not see it.
Well,
it's
kind of
interesting. A master.
Wow. The first one that I ever saw, I was 52, and I was at James's Ranch. We just finished watching a film about crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
And the group walked out into the field, and it was dark because there's no outside lighting because we want to keep our eyes from the light pollution. And we looked up, and there above us, what appeared to be a satellite going overhead, a gold ball going overhead. And I said, oh, that's a satellite in my mind. And then it stopped. And then it did exactly what you said. It got white. I mean, it grew about 50 times in size, and it got white. And I got... Well, I got a little tinge of fear, like, oh my gosh, it's coming down right on top of us.
That feeling that they're real, that's how you know that you're definitely seeing something.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that feeling.
The interesting thing is that wave of fear, evidently I projected it out of myself because it stopped again, shrunk back down to a little gold ball, and made a right angle turn and just drifted away.
Yeah, they won't come down unless you're ready for them. That's what your caller was saying earlier. If we can't be ready for it, they won't come.
Now, while we've been talking, you have sent me an image of the glyphs that you have recorded in your art. And with your permission, I'll create a link on X Squared Radio and allow people to have access to that if you'll let me.
Oh, well, if you'd like to post that little pinky one that I sent you, the one that I just sent you, with it's mostly gold and there's a turquoise at the bottom with the green in there, You can
right.
that one. I mean, I have some really good ones on that website that I've done when I've sat down and seriously done it, and I'll send you one of the two of those after the show that you can post on there as well.
Okay.
But yeah, you have permission to post that one that I sent you, and
okay,
I'll send
great,
you a few
great.
More.
We'll put it up, and I'll give you access to it, James, and we'll see if we can't get some popularity
well,
for
Like I mentioned online, I do that often, it comes out of my fingers. I mean, if I sit here, I can doodle in the air with my finger and go out, you know what I mean? And I've been doing this for about maybe 2-3 years, about, I don't know if you want to call me a walk-in or a wake-up or whatever the hell you want to call me. I woke up maybe about 3-4 years ago. By the way, I'm 17. And I woke up when I was about maybe 14, and I started really, really getting into all this stuff. I was on the internet, and I found, the internet showed me everything. That's how I found you, I mean, and this radio show. I mean, it's just, I've let it been a huge guide in my life. And I started doing it, and I do a lot of meditation. I'm not in school, so I have tons of free time to think. And through my meditations and research, study on the internet and various millions of websites with people that are credible, uncredible. I take all information. And that's one thing that we share in common. One of my philosophies is there's truth in everything, even if it's a total lie. Because if you know that it's a lie, then you can see what isn't a lie, and you'll know the truth because it must be not what that is. And I don't know, it's a little paradox there, but
yeah, that's very great.
I'm sure someone got that.
that's very Greek. The Greeks were all about that. Sometimes, in fact, there's a thing that turn of the century scientists adopted, which said the opposite of a truth might be another truth.
Another truth, of course. There's truth in everything. That's the whole illusion of duality, is we don't always see all of the truth, and we assign it good and true and false when everything is true. I mean, even if it's a little distorted, to sum up it's true. And like they said before about the colors and seeing a being or a craft or anything, about perception. What's true to you isn't always true to someone else. Or, you know, what's true to me isn't true to you. But we all share a truth, and the one supposed the universal truth is love, and you know, everybody says love in some level, and they can't deny it because it's true, and some do deny it, and maybe truth, because they live in their little box reality, but beyond their box reality, love may be true, and I'm getting into philosophy here, it's not what I came to call about.
Yeah, truth, I like one saying that people want things to be tangible, or it's not true to them, and you know, we can measure probably less than 1% of the universe that we live in, and there's another 99% out there that's intangible. And so it has to be tangible to them. And so what you ask them, you say, well, what happens after you leave this body? Are you tangible or are you intangible? And they go, well, I guess I'm intangible. And then you
no,
say,
you're
well,
both.
What? Yeah, and I said, well, what about God, is God tangible or intangible? And they go, no, it's intangible. And then you go, well, what about love? Is love tangible or intangible? And they go, well, it's intangible. And I said, so you're saying that love, God, and you, after you drop this body, don't exist, you know? And it really shocks them, and they start thinking about it. Well, wait a second, maybe the intangible is more real than the tangible, and that's when you start opening up to the greater reality that's going on all around us.
Right. Earlier in the program, we were talking about large ropes of dark matter that are
mm-hmm.
so, I mean, we can't see them, but what we do see is that these ropes of matter, of dark matter, which are 270 million light years long, are actually pushing around galaxies.
Yeah.
So they might not be tangible to our eyes or our instruments, but they're certainly tangible to the light matter that makes up the galaxies.
Those are the strings, you know, and the super string theory. You know, the big banjo in the sky or something.
That's interesting. All right. So, you have any more questions for our guest, James?
Actually, no. I got distracted. I would like to talk more about the glyphs, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's go. Let's talk about them.
I was talking about my research and studies, and I went off on a different tangent. My mind is mm-hmm. way too big out there. But the thing I learned about them, and through a bunch of studying things I read, is it's commonly called light language or the language of light. And if you search those, you'll actually find there are a few people out there that have developed an quote-unquote alphabet or whatever they have discovered, and which I'm not saying isn't true. This is also what you said earlier in the program. It's all pieces of a puzzle, and, you know, you got to put it together. And the way it's read is in telepathy. Like, this is to all the viewers, too. When you go online, if Agnew does post my images, when you look at them, please don't try to read them. It's not anything you can read how we read a sentence of a word. You know, you go online and you type in a website, you start typing x2.com. You know, it's not an address. It's, even if it's untangible, like x2.com, that's not a real word, you know. It's a bunch of symbols and letters, com, right? But whatever. It's not something you read. It's something that you, it's telepathy. It's, light language is telepathic. Mm-hmm. It's something that you get all at once. It's what downloads. Mass conscious is like the internet. I mean, it comes in packets. I mean, I'm sure both of you are familiar with being, thinking something or talking something, and then boom, 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 you get three big blocks of energy in your head and might be with a word or a sound or a feeling, and you get all these things all at once and, you know, get sent, and then you have to digest it. And that's what I like to do when I do these things, when I do these drawings. Mm-hmm. I'll set an idea, or I'll set up like a geometry. If you see, I'll send them to Dr. Agnew so we can post them. I'll set up a geometry, and then I'll just go in with color. Usually, I like to use color because color speaks very loud. And I just go, and you'll see. And if you look at it, don't try to read it. Meditate on it. You want to feel it. You know what it seems to you. I mean, when I do a lot of abstract artwork, when I show people my artwork, I say don't see what's there, unless sometimes I do draw tangible things. I say, what do you see? And whatever you see in my artwork is whatever is really there, because I'm not drawing it on totally this dimension. I'm drawing it interdimensionally, because in my head, when I'm drawing it, you know, there's tons of downloads coming into me and through my head, and I can only draw two dimensions and, you know, maybe seven rays of color with my computer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a woman in San Diego that I met that she sees these glyphs too and starts drawing them, and she says the same thing. It's like information coming in packets, but she doesn't really know, she can't explain it or put it into words, but it's more of it triggers some kind of feelings or like a subconscious message, you know, within her.
Yeah, telepathy. It's a sixth sense.
Yeah.
I know you're very well aware of the concept. I know you're in contact. You speak about it. I'm in contact all the time. We're souls of the same kin, if you want to say that. Star brothers, and we're all like that. But there are those of us that are very much in our bodies and not at the same time, or it's existing in other bodies.
Yeah, and it's, the trick is to relate it to this level, and it's hard to, because a lot of times there's no reference points on this level for people to understand.
Well, it's not hard. It's not always hard. I mean, it's all about having the right kind of mind, or maybe I'm a special soul. I don't want to call myself special, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've done a lot of study, and everybody can do their own study, and you have to get, like you said, it's all puzzle and picture, but I guess some puzzles have more on them than the others. When you do a puzzle, you know, there's the outer rim pieces that might be a color or part of a picture, and then you might put the face on the face on a character in the puzzle, and it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see the whole thing.
Well, what I see is people try to read it intellectually, and that doesn't work, because it's a higher level message. And, yeah, the message is coming in on a much higher level. And if they're just geared on the intellect, they go, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it's a weird squiggly, but so what? You know, that's what they say on their intellectual level, but if they would sit and meditate on it, all of a sudden they'd start getting all kinds of information from it.
Well, they used to say the same thing about Cubism and about, you know, Salvador Dali.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what was happening is these artists were getting input from the fourth and even fifth dimensions, and Picasso did it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was they started drawing it, and, you know, people that were used to, you know, maybe Monet or maybe Renoir, they would say, well, you know, this is a twisted mind that would come up with something distorted like this. But artistically awake people began to see that what they were actually painting was fourth and fifth dimensional inputs. In the fourth and fifth dimension, there are no sides to things. Everything is visible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not uncommon to see, you know, both eyes on one side of someone's face, or a clock, you know, looking like it's dripping over a block of ice.
Yeah.
And this is what they were drawing. So even, you know, very famous artists, and maybe, you know, your art will be worth a lot of money someday, because the icons of art are what awaken those messages within us.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you draw these glyphs, you know, they might be meaningless with respect to ABC or uno, dos, tres or something like that, but the icon, the iconoclastic language that it forms reaches into maybe before human life, maybe before
and
mortality.
If you mind me interrupting.
Inside of us. Sure, we get a telepathic imprint.
It's the same exact thing as I think you said it was two weeks ago when you had the woman that was talking about the ancient Egypt, and when she was talking about the hieroglyphs, is that besides them being all perfect and everything, is when you look at them, you're projected an image, you know, you can know what this symbol means and you can know where it belongs in the sentence, but when you actually look at the symbol, when it's there in front of you, it's projected into your mind, you know, it doesn't, I mean, when you read the word dog on paper, it could say dog. It could be, if you know how to read, it's a sound, dog, right? But because exists because you know beforehand what a dog is. But what's it called? You get the image of a dog in your head, whatever that image is, according to your perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all language works like this, or the written language at least.
It's kind of interesting because you see DOG, but someone who lived with St. Bernards gets an image of a St. Bernard in their mind, and someone who's lived with Pekingese gets a Pekingese in their mind. They don't see DOG, they
mm-hmm.
see a dog. So what the Egyptians did, and they're really the only ones to do it, is instead of putting the word up there in a language, they put the image up there. In their writing, it is the actual image, and when you read, when you see these cartouches, you
mm-hmm.
actually get a message from it.
What if they're telepathic and didn't really care about a language? In the ancient days, maybe they were all telepathic, and it was just more of an art form.
We have been telepathic. If anyone that knows about Atlantis and Lemuria and all the pre-existing
mm-hmm.
civilizations, and then you go back and look at these closed-minded scientists, and I mean, I'm not saying they're closed-minded, they're very intelligent, and they study what they study, but they're still in their box, and they go and they say, okay, look, we have proof here that says, going far this back, people didn't write, and they must have been unintelligent, and they didn't have any systematic of language, and they
mm-hmm.
grunted at each other. And you want to know what? They probably did grunt at each other, although I'd like to think it was a little more sophisticated, and they were projecting tones like maybe Om or, you know, something similar to that. And then they would telepathically communicate with each other. I operate on the higher realms. I'm sure we all know about that. And on the higher realms, sometimes there is no, I mean, the beings that are pure energy and matter, on the higher realms, there is no physical form. It's sound, light, and sound and light is the purest form of energy, in my opinion, or from what I've learned. It's light and sound is a high vibration that you can receive consciously or experience consciously, and color. Light, sound, and color. Light is color. Or, I don't know. This is actually, I've gone with myself until very. Yeah, I'm not even going to go into that. Let's just keep going. Sound and light.
I see the higher you go up. What I found out with some of the beings is that the higher you go up, the less they talk. And they're just being. They're just in this bliss being, and they send that energy to you. And the communication is more transferred through feelings. And we probably annoy them, you know, when we start asking them a million questions. You know, they're saying, you know, you're kind of taking me out of my bliss. Why don't you rise up and hang out in this frequency, you know?
Well, to get to them, don't you have to go to their frequency? If they wanted to talk to you with words, they'd come down, like you said earlier, right? If you're
going to
talk to them, you're obviously
not. We have to go up, you
know.
You know
what you're doing.
But the matter that makes up our bodies, made of neutrons and protons and electrons, cannot withstand that level of radiation. I mean, it would be above X-ray, which would just dimmerize the matter that makes up our bodies. So we have to go through this temporary change, which the prophets call transfiguration. And once you go through that temporary change, or you step into that energy envelope that allows you to withstand that energy, then you get pure communication. And it can be quite humbling.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, we can also step out of this physical body into our non-physical energy body or light body or the other bodies and experience him on that level.
And my idea is you can exist in your current body and those bodies at the same time, because I personally do. And I know when I sleep, I've had dreams where I've been in more than one place at once. And I don't know how I can explain it in this realm, but I have dreams where I'm in two places at once, and I know where I am in both places, and it's a group conscious. The barriers are taken down, and there's things like that.
Yeah, you're
I've done that with students. I've actually bilocated when I was teaching intersensitivity classes, and I had some students down in Mexico. And I was thinking about them while they're down in Mexico. I said, boy, I'd love to get off this mountain. It would be so nice to be on a nice, warm, sunny beach. And next thing I know, I was there, and I met with them and talked with them, and I had lunch with them, and I even drank a beer with them. And they were just blown away. And then I came back here, and I was in deep meditation. I just went out, you know. And
physical confirmation that you were actually there.
It blew their mind. I said, you know, I never did go to Mexico physically. I told them, but that was a bilocation that happened. And they couldn't believe it. They go, oh, no, they go, you were there. You were physical. We talked with you. You know, we ate everything. And
that's great.
And I said, you sure with me, 100%. And they said, yeah, I'm 100% because you talked about the classes. And
you know, what's really great is that you can do that up in where you are right now. Actually, must have been weeks, months ago, you came on Brooke's show. And it was the first time I heard you talk. And what's it called? And I went online. I was looking at your rent, which I actually do plan to come out there. When's the earliest that it's open that I can come out and spend time there? Because I'm like sick of this city with all these fake people and cement. And I'd love to get out there.
Probably the end of March, I'd say we'll probably be dug out. I think we'll be pretty much dug out, and we have a little bit of damage because of the snow and the roofs. We had one of the problems with one of the roofs just leaking, so we have to do some repairs and things, but I'm sure we'll have it done before, you know, the end of March.
Yeah,
email up here Dr. Brooks or Dr. Agnew, and I'll definitely have to send you some of this artwork and have some dialogue with you, because I do much better in personal conversations. I don't have to hold myself back. And in text, you can ask Dr. Agnew. I type like 60 words a minute, and my on the phone doesn't even adjust this.
Yeah, speaking is too slow for him. He types a lot faster than you can speak.
But we're getting off subject. What I wanted to say was, the first time I heard you speaking on here, I went up and looked your ranch on, and I went on Google Earth, and I looked at it, and I looked at the four mountains. And if you realize, the four mountains make a cross. And I've been to Seattle before. I have an uncle out there, and the land is beautiful. The mountains are beautiful. And there are tons of portals out there. And I bilocate, and I ask to project all the time. I'm doing it right now. I mean, I don't know where I am, but I know I'm there. And what's it called? And I've tried to consciously or unconsciously, you know, when you get in that trance state, it's hard to tell, bilocate in the physical realm. And I get the sensation of where you start to form the body. I don't know if anyone does this work, they'll understand what I'm talking about, when you form the body, you go into the body, or you exist in that body, and then you try to form it. And the visualization I get, I guess it's the best way I could explain it, is, okay, I'm going to imagine that I was standing, you know, on a road somewhere in, you know, maybe Washington State, right? And what you do is you start standing there, and you can see it in your third eye, you close your eyes, you know, and then you feel it there. And then as soon as you start to get closer and closer to that physical density, you can feel your astral body starting to pick up more light, and it starts to slow down. And normally when I try this, I normally get to a certain point and my physical body becomes really uncomfortable, and I have to break the meditation and break the trance and, you know, think about something else and slowly build it back. So, I mean, and I attribute that partially to being in a city. There's so much mass conscious here that you have to break through when you want to do that individual work. and being out there in the nature and everything, you're full of portals. I mean, Earth is, if you know anything about Earth from a galactic standpoint, is we're basically like the hub of our galaxy. I mean, you can come to Earth and hit a portal and, you know, go 10 galaxies over to another version of Earth that's in that galaxy. And, you know, you can jump through the portals there. Whereas if you were, I don't know, maybe on the other side of the galaxy, I mean, not even that's tangible in that form, but whatever. And, you know, you'd have to actually get on a ship and travel and jump through certain star portals, the constellations, that's how those work and all of the stuff that you know about. And, you know, eventually maybe you come to Earth or, you know, you jump through your own portals. I mean, think of warp drives and, like, sci-fi, Star Trek and everything, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, right. they can warp drive anywhere. But from my understanding is, depending on where you are, if anyone knows anything about astrology is all about the placement of the stars and the energies that come through it, the portals. So when you want to travel somewhere or you want to get to a certain energy, because beyond Earth there's no place, you know, those concepts are very in our egos. And when you want to go to another energy in a different part of wherever you are, is you have to jump through these portals. You have to shift your energy from that energy to that energy. But Earth, mm-hmm. Earth is this amazing little crystal in the middle of, you know, this huge, I don't know which one I use in metaphor, mountain of a galaxy. You know, it's one crystal that's extremely clear and beautiful. And, you know, this crystal puts off a vibration that resonates through the whole mountain, even though it's this little tiny dot, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
this is a vortex here that where the land is here, and it makes the veils very thin, so you can experience all kinds of things. And we watch the ships actually create their own little wormholes and vortexes and pop in and out, and they have that technology. It's like a spiritual technology that, you know, they can pop in here and be at the other end of the galaxy in a moment.
It's not even spiritual. It's just that our society here doesn't acknowledge the spirit of science, or that science has a spirit. It's not that their technology is any spiritual. It's just that we're kind of lacking a spirit, or our society is not us.
Some of the portals have even been photographed. Michal's, in his book, The Orb Project, he has two great pictures
of
orbs actually forming the portal that they came through. It's really quite an amazing picture.
Yeah, and he calls them torsion fields, what really amazed me, and I have some, I've got to dig them out, but up here, I'll go into meditation, I do this technique, it's a Tibetan technique where you spin your bands, and there's a picture of me on the website in my bio section where I'm actually leaving my body, and you can see one body leaving the other body and the band spinning, and we caught it on film. But up here, a lot of times when I meditate, I disappear. And I'm fully conscious of myself, my body, the land. I see everything as clear as a bell, just like I was, in this reality. But I'll disappear to other people because I'm just out of their frequency. And I'll walk up to them, and they're looking right at me, and there'll be about four or five people in the group, and I'll walk up and stand there. They don't see me at all. And then I said, hey, how's it going? And all of a sudden, they jump out of their shoes. It scares the crap out of them. And they go, where'd you come from? Yeah, they go, Where'd you come from? And I go, I was over there meditating. I just walked over to see her. They go, no, you just appeared. You know, I was looking right at you. There was nothing there.
You know, it's kind of funny. We went to lunch one time, and we were at a conference, and we just got done speaking. So we get in the car. We go down to the restaurant. We find a table there in the corner, right in the pathway of all the waitresses, and the four of us sit down. And we're sitting there, and we're talking, and we're, you know, waiting, and the waitress walks by us like five or six times. And finally, one in our party said, excuse me, but do you think if we moved to another table, we could get better service? And she said, wait, where did you guys come from? I walked by this table three times. There's no one at this table. I said, I know. It's because we were invisible, but now you can see us. Can we get, like, some water and some food?
I'm very, very, very used to that, being in the big city with all these people that are stuck in their boxes and being a spiritual being in a huge place with tons of people. You get lost in the crowds. I mean, you don't even have to be on any other levels, and people ignore you.
Yeah.
But sometimes
I had an event here. We have a girl that was working at the local diner. It's like the Dukes of Hazzard, you know. She's one of those kind of, very attractive. And she was sitting there wiping the diner, you know, and everything. And I went up to sit right at the counter, And I sat down at the counter, and she's wiping the diner and you know, wiping down the counter and everything, kind of talking and looking right at me and talking and wiping the diner. And, I mean, we're like, you know, a foot away. And then I go, how's it going? She goes, she's like jumps and throws the rag, you know, and it just scared the crap out of her. It was unbelievable. She goes, where'd you come from? Where'd you come from, you know? And I said, I do that.
It's okay.
I just tell her, okay, I drop in and out, you know.
I was just going to say, this must be really funny because the people like us that work with the higher beings and the ETs, and you know, they can come down and project into a lower body and stand right next to us, and we might not even see them. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? They could be here going, hey, pay attention to me, you know? What's up, what's up? And I mean, normally...
Well, I see that happen. Yeah, I'll be meditating and doing a walking meditation, and all of a sudden they'll be walking right next to me. And then
yeah,
I turn to look at them straight on, and they disappear. You know, so.
Yeah, hey, a lot of times with me, I have really bad vision. I can't see any energy with my actual physical eyes. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes I'll just be, like, totally zoned out, you know, watching something with my physical eyes. And, you know, I can feel them there, and I just don't pay attention to it because I'm caught up in whatever I'm doing. And they have to, like, you know, tap me on my third eye and be like, hey, look, and they'll show me, like, a short image. And then I'll look over, and I'll see nothing there. I'll look over in the corner of my room, you know, and there'll still be the boxes and the mirror and, you know, the drawing I have on the wall. And
mm-hmm.
I'll hear them in my head, and you know, and then the dialogue or whatever happens goes on. It's very much that must be really annoying for them too. I mean, just as it is for us to get served at a restaurant, you know, if they're trying to come down and have a conversation with you or you know, find out some information, you know, they must be standing there for 5-10 minutes or whatever feels like that for them, and being like, hello.
Well, a lot of times too, I'll be driving around, and I drive up and down the hill, and you know, I'll be driving around. And early in the morning, I used to go and, you know, and get my breakfast at the local diner, and I'd just have this big, you know, grin on my face, being all blissed out after meditating in the morning. And, you know, the way they interpreted that is that I was the biggest stoner in the valley, you know. And I go, I don't do drugs, you know. I said, they go, there's no way you could be that blissed out and that happy. And they go, what, do you have a meth lab? And so rumors went around that I had a meth lab and a big grow operation. And I actually invited the sheriff to come and check out the whole ranch to kind of end those rumors.
We're making the machines like Dr. Agnew had to guess the guy that created the positive energy machines. And we're not growing any bud. We got these machines here that are putting off vibrations. I mean, if you want to sit here, it's totally legal, and just sit in front of this box and chill out and meditate,
yeah, exactly,
right?
have an energy experience that's completely natural, and let your own pineal line be generated in your brain. It's a hallucinogen, you know, that your body makes.
Yeah, actually, I'll just say something. My personal belief that I learned through my studies in meditation, that beyond what conventional science says, is that our brains, and actually conventional science does show evidence of this. It's just not on the you know, your magazines and everything, or at least the popular ones, that our brains can produce any chemical that we need. I mean, that's the
mm-hmm.
placebo effect. I mean, but people don't realize that you don't need the actual placebo to create the effect.
Yeah.
Is that, well, I guess you do need the placebo, but I don't know, I'm using a different word for it, because placebo is kind of like, here's a sugar pill, you know, your cold's going to go away. To me, it's a little different when you actually consciously, or at least are on a higher conscious
mm-hmm.
level, decide that you need this, and your brain produces it. But
it works in both directions, you know. You can think that you're sick and that you're sickly, and guess what? You are. And if you think
I haven't been sick in 3-4 years, ever since I first got into this stuff, and I started meditating and really diving into this whole extraterrestrial mm-hmm. spiritual knowledge. I haven't had anything worse than a runny nose or, you know, or not wanting to get out of bed in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I used to be sick all the time. I said sore throats and ear infections and all that other garbage. And I mean,
well,
I
love that used to say that all the time. I said, well, where are you? He said, oh, I'm sick. I said, no, you're not sick. You have a cold, but you're not sick. You need to eliminate that word from your vocabulary and say, I'm healthy. I have a cold right now, but I'm healthy.
Well,
it changed his whole life.
Oh, it does. You know, they've proven now almost all your top physicists, and I've actually worked with brain surgeons and people like surgeons and you know, people with several degrees. You've met one of them actually, but they've pretty much proven that the mind exists outside the brain, and Bruce Lipton's work too is showing that there's a field of consciousness around the body that's actually controlling the body and the DNA and everything else, and that really there's a non-physical consciousness that's really in charge of things. And the more we can change that consciousness and program that, the more our physical world is going to follow suit. And, you know, they've taken every cell in the body and put it in a stress-free environment, and they're immortal. They live forever.
Yeah, we create our own environment, and our genes select the proteins that make up our body during our lifetime, and it's selected based on the environment. But once the proteins are selected, once our cell membranes have been built, they run in automatic. Our consciousness has nothing to do with it, but our consciousness does have something to do with creating the environment in which the next cells divide.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got a little flash in my head of something I learned a long time ago while doing research that I felt like sharing. I was doing some research, I think it was this one really, really good contact case. I forget his name, I'm really bad with him. Alex something. Actually, he's actually got the way I found you, Dr. Agnew.
Alex Collier?
Well, yes, it is. And one of the really interesting things that I read in his thing is the way we measure a year on a soul level, or the way the extraterrestrial is when every cell in your body reproduces, and that's how they measure your growth. And
right,
the cell is a self-sustaining system, and the more advanced your cell is, the more I don't know how to say it, the more light it holds, I guess, is the faster you grow, because there's more that can reproduce faster and faster. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but something flashed in my head, and I had to get it out.
That's all right. We have about 3 minutes left, and I just want to let you know that we always appreciate your telephone calls, and we definitely appreciate the AOL instant messaging. How it is that you talk and type at the same time, two different things, is beyond me, but you've been doing it all night, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I finally got you online. I had to call you after 4 weeks, so as long as you stay online, I'd love to keep chatting with you guys, and I'd really like to apologize to anyone else that wanted to call in the last hour. Kind of got carried away, and I'm a feels. And
all right.
Everyone that sees my artwork on Dr. Agnew's site, if I can, I'm going to give him a link to more of my artwork where you can just browse my whole gallery, because not only do I do those energy drawings, I channel images of higher beings and beings from other planes and all that other good shit. And I'm just promoting myself here. I'm sorry. You can do that now. I'll get off the line and listen to the show on my headphones.
Find a way to package all that up and bring it out to the ranch July 4th and show it to people.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I'll have it on my hard drive, my external hard drive or my iPod, same thing. So I'll see everyone
there. Yeah,
then.
I definitely want to see it. Yeah, get it together on a link or a website or something. And
it's all hosted on one gallery. I have it online. I'll give Dr. Adney the link. He'll post it.
Yeah, send me an email too. Go to Ease Eddie.
All right.
Yeah,
so I'll see you guys later.
All right.
Have a good
Thanks
night.
For calling in.
Okay.
James, I really didn't mean to keep you for 3 hours, but you
know, no problem.
When you and I get together, it's like, 3 hours went by. We were having such a great time.
Oh yeah,
Even though we're both working in Washington State right now, we're about 6 hours apart because Washington's a big state. It's like the northwestern Texas.
Oh yeah, and then you have to go way around, you know, mountains and things like that to get wherever you're going. So. It seems twice as far, you know, as a crow flies, some places are just like an hour away, but it's going to be a 4 or 5 hour trip just to get there.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make my way down there. I have, as you know, this plant up here is getting ready to come online, so the next 3 or 4 weeks are going to be pretty intense, and then I'm going to have a break, and I'm going to come down and see you.
I'd love to talk more with you about, you know, the galactic plane and all these other things coming up and get your take on that, and Planet X as well, you know, any information you have on that.
Well, maybe we can talk about it on your program on Saturday.
That sounds good. Unfortunately, I have somebody booked already, but you are next on the on the list.
All right. Well, X Squared Radio listeners, Earth Explorers, next week we have Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who is the author of The Way of the Explorer. He was an Apollo 14 astronaut and also conducted one of the most amazing ESP experiments in history. And he's going to be in our program. We're going to talk about all that and much, much more. We appreciate you being with us tonight, James, and you have yourself a great week.
I will. You have to get Dr. Mitchell out here to experience some of these things flying around the sky.
That's definitely going to be part of the challenge. Definitely.
Tell him about your experience here and tell him that, you know, it is going on, and see, I'd love to hear his comment on it.
Yeah, I would too, and we're going to record it, so it'll
okay.
be there for posterity.
All right,
James,
great.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks again for having me on.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. All right, Earth Explorers, that's it for this 3 hours of X Squared Radio on the 24th. Wow, the weeks are just flying. I can't believe it. It's going to be 4th of July before you know it. Don't forget that you can make your way to the ranch. Go to eseti.org. And, of course, you can find the link by going to x2-radio.com and listening to this archive. We'll be back next Sunday, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.